I'm back. Good morning. Welcome to WGN Radio, 720 AM. Jim Toronto, Elton Jim, filling in for Dean Richards this morning. But listen anyway. Here with the regular Sunday morning show crew. Hello, Dave Schwann.
Good morning, good morning.
And hello, Andy Mazur.
Good morning. Good morning.
And hello, producer Jack.
Hello.
Wow, Jack, excited as usual.
It's the hammer.
Oh my gosh, that energy. I don't know how I can match that. Good to be back here. Dean may be calling in today. No surprise, I think he's one of the key members on the WGN-TV float in the Pride Day parade today. Happy Pride Day. It's been Pride Month all month long, and culminating here in Chicago with the annual Pride Day parade. As we've heard on the news, Dave Schwann just had a report from WGN-TV that 53rd annual Pride Day parade. A big day in Chicago, actually. This is a unique day. We've got Pride in the morning, and we've got Stones in the evening.
Yeah, right.
Rolling Stones.
Second concert forum taking place tonight at Soldier Field.
Exactly. Yep. Night two at Soldier Field. And speaking of Dean, here is our own Grand Marshal of the Sunday morning radio. It's Dean Richards.
Wow.
Listen,
what a title.
Listen to that. I've made you a sash.
You made me a what?
A sash to wear. You know, like it says, Grand Marshal.
Oh, you made me a sash.
A sash. So where is Dean right now? Are you a pre?
I haven't had one of those since I was in Boy Scouts.
Oh, that's right. With all your medals and all your bear patches.
All my accolades. Yes.
Yeah. So where is a Dean on Pride Day
today? Cigarette smoking merit badge.
Nice. Very nice. So are you getting
over the play pool at the other scout camp merit badge?
Can you really make a fire with two dry sticks?
Sure, of course you can.
Really? Never been able to do it. It's probably why I failed Wee Blues.
I don't think you ever really tried hard enough.
I was a Cub Scout. I had my bear and wolf patches, and I still have my red vest. So I was Den 3935. Or Pack.
That was pack 76. Yeah.
Pack 3935, and I was in Den 2, I believe. But
Cub
that's,
Scouts and Boy Scouts. Love them both.
Yeah, no, just a Cub Scout. But anyway, so happy Pride, and where are you right now? Are you Pride prepping?
I am driving over to the WGN-TV right now because we're all going to depart from there to head down to, I think, Broadway and Sheridan is where
yes.
It starts this year. They changed everything.
They changed the time. It's a little earlier this year.
Yeah, it's earlier. It's but we'll be represented on our WGN-TV float.
Yeah, who's on there with you?
Well, you know, the star of the float is Bozo, as always, Bozo the Clown. I'm telling you what, after all these years, the show hasn't even been on the air in over 20 years.
And
people still go nuts when they see Bozo. It's amazing.
Well, this is the only... I said this is the only parade where Bozo is the underdressed guy.
That's very true. That's true. This is where Bozo is.
I don't think anybody's going to even.
Outlandish.
I don't think anybody's going to notice Bozo.
Right. Unless he gets fireworks coming out of his hair or something.
So now, I've just heard rumors. The Pride Parade isn't like sort of also dubbed Dean's Drag Race, right? I mean, are you going to be RuPauling it today, or are you conservative? What are you wearing?
What are you asking me if I'm in drag?
Yeah, are you going to be? Well, come on, don't you go with the flow? I mean, come on, it's fun.
Is that the flow?
That's what I would do. That's what I would do. I'd be RuPaul in it.
That's what you would do. I think everyone knows that's what you would do.
Well, that's every Sunday morning for me.
uh, To answer your question, no, I am not on track. Let me just try to imagine how ugly a woman I would be if I were to try such a thing.
Not even
but
backless.
That's not me.
Not even me.
I mean, that's for some people. You know, that's you know, some people like to get dressed up. And
yeah, I mean, my gosh, like that's the day. It's everybody
this
gets into
about
the
being yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
This parade is about being true to yourself, and if that truth for you, Jim, is putting on a long sequin gown and whatever else that you could possibly put on.
I'm wearing jeans.
I got jeans and a t-shirt out. So.
Oh, no backless chaps or anything? No? Oh,
that is, you know, as much as you want to bring stereotypes into this.
It's not a stereotype. It's pride. True. It's fun.
It certainly is.
Who is certainly
a stereotype.
Who else from WGN is on the float with you?
Well, I'm not there yet, so I'm not sure who's participating. I know.
You don't even know. And we should mention that we not only have Dean as a parade participant, but on the show today, we also have a grand marshal of a legitimate parade, Dave Schwann. Congratulations on that.
Thank you so much. Looking forward to it. It comes up Thursday at noon.
The Skokie 4th of July Day Parade. Do you get a big top hat? What do you get? As Grand Marshal.
I will find out when I'm there. I have a shirt.
Yeah, Jim's big into the costume.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Yeah, well, come on. It's a parade.
Jim is big into
festive.
Costume.
Oh, should I wear a festive pin then?
Festive pin for 4th of July. Hopefully you'll have something with red, white, and blue or Old Glory or fireworks.
No, I am displaying a shirt with a WGN logo on it.
Oh,
there'll be plenty of red, white, and blue out there.
Are you both?
Red, white, and blue and I voted.
I've got the I voted sticker ready to go, Dean.
That does have a flag on it, so that'll be perfect.
And it's also a red, white, and blue sticker.
That's right. Just wear your sticker. Just wear your sticker. Yeah. I mean, are you both practicing your waves, your queen waves? You know, the little cupped hand wave. No. Wow. Okay. Well, that one fell like a lead balloon. I'm just trying to bring up some parade stuff here. Play with me, folks. Jeez. Wow. My goodness.
I'm all ready to go. I've been waving at people for a long time.
Now, are you going to be in a convertible, Schwani?
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah, should be. Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah, we have a float.
Yeah. So then, do you throw any things out? Throw anything at the crowd? Or are you just waving? It's not like a.
You asking me or are you?
Well, either one of you.
No, we're not allowed to do that.
Oh, because I mean, New Orleans, you know. And
I was going to say I don't know what the rules are for Skokie, but you don't.
We don't. No, you're not allowed
to throw things off the parade because people get hurt. When
Well, I'm just in New Orleans on Mardi Gras, they throw the beads and everything. That's what I was.
Well,
that's the Mardi Gras parade, very different from the parades here.
So
anything goes at Mardi Gras.
Dave, where do you kick off? At Kaufman's Deli or at Skokie Swift? Where are you kicking off?
Around that area there, yeah. I'll have to double-check.
Here we go with the stereotypes again.
What is that?
Here we go with the stereotypes.
What, the Skokie Swift is a stereotype? It's a location in Skokie.
Right.
Oh, my God.
Okay, Jim.
All right. Thanks, Dean. I appreciate your time. And, my gosh. Wow, this is going to be a fun 4 hours. Okay. Anyway, so you will be waving, you will be having fun, and then any plans afterwards, just taking it fun? Yeah. Well, I got to do something here, Dean.
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, no.
Is that a question?
Yeah, I was just asking you what you're doing after the parade.
Oh, I don't know. I'll probably get off the float, get in my car, and go home.
Nice. Okay. All right, well, thank you so much, Dean. I appreciate you calling in from the parade. Have a good time. I'm going to take a quick break, and we'll be back after this. No switching. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards this morning. Dean at the Pride Parade sitting on the WGN television float. We've got a jam-packed show today. Lots of stuff to talk about. As I said, exciting day. The Pride Parade kicking off at 11 o'clock, the 53rd annual Pride Day Parade here in Chicago, kicking off at 11 o'clock from Broadway and Sheridan. A new route, you may have heard. Also, a little controversy this year for the parade. Fewer floats. They want, you know, it's been the parade has taken on such big magnitude that it's almost become a safety hazard. And so they've decided this year to cut the amount of floats. I believe they used to have 200, and now they have maybe between 125 and 150. And they've changed the routes as well to help with traffic. So we'll see how that goes. But it's always a very fun and exciting, as Dean said on his way to the parade. It is about celebrating who you are and yourself. And that in these days is so important. And everybody likes to get out there and be who they are. And that is the parade to do that. So all those out there at the parade or going on your way there, have a good time and be yourself. A big event held in New York yesterday, in fact, for the Stonewall Memorial. Stonewall, of course, if you don't know about it, was a key moment in the gay rights movement here in the United States. And in June of 1969, the New York police raided a gay bar in Greenwich Village called the Stonewall Inn. And it became such a huge moment because instead of being rounded up, and this is how much we have made so much progress over the last 55, 60 years in this country and in this world, you know, the police rounded up and arrested people because they were in the gay bar. And the people this time did not just go easily. They fought back. And even though there had been some other skirmishes, Stonewall is viewed as one of the key moments in the gay rights movement here in the United States. And they're in New York, in Greenwich Village. There is now a monument to Stonewall and now a visitor center too, with information and pictures and everything, so people can really get an understanding of the impact and the influence and that moment in history. And I mention it because not only was President Biden there, but Elton John showed up there to celebrate. He actually performed a few songs at a little press conference they had and gave a nice speech. And so, it is it's Pride Month ending up today. So have a good Pride Month. And then this evening, wow, I mean, some people might be doing a doubleheader today. You go from the Pride Parade, and if you've got tickets, you go from the Boys Town area, the Broadway, Lincoln Park kind of area there, and then you stay downtown, have some fun, and then hit Lakeshore Drive and go to Soldier Field, where Mick and Keith and Ronnie and the rest of the Rolling Stones will be putting on night two of their event. In fact, later in the show, we're going to have a super fan, a Rolling Stone super fan, who was at the show on Thursday, night one, and of course is going tonight, and he will be filling us in with some highlights as to what happened at on night one and what we might be able to expect if you're going tonight at Soldier Field on night two. The Stones have been mixing up their set lists on this Hackney Diamonds tour. They've been they get some fan input as to what songs they might want to play. And Mick and the Boys, from all reports that I have seen online, at 80 years old, Mick Jagger is 80, and I think he's about to turn 81 pretty soon. And Keith turns 81, I believe, in December. And from all indications, what I have seen, the footage of Mick Jagger, he is still prancing around, running around, and entertaining people like no other. You know, the Stones proclaimed themselves in the 70s as the world's greatest rock and roll band. And a lot of times it is self-promotion that helps, and that tag has stuck, but for one reason, because they go out all the time and prove it. So if you're going tonight, have a good time. I do not have tickets. I've seen the Stones about three or four times. I hate to tell you the first time I saw it. I won't say the year because it scares me myself. I'll just mention the tour. And if you're old enough and you remember it, then you may have been there too. I went to the Tattoo You tour. So if you remember That was the first time I saw the Stones. The Tattoo You Tour. So go back on Google and see when that album was released, and you'll know when I went to see it. Just a teenager, but I was blown away then and seen them three or four times over the years, and it is always a great, great show. So enjoy the Stones tonight. As I said, later on, we will be talking to somebody who's going to be going, who went on Thursday and will be going tonight. We will have a lot of the regular Dean Richards segments, as well as a little Elton Jim Toronto flavor into the next 4 hours. We're here till 1 o'clock. We will have our the health segment with Jeremy Silver. We'll be talking to Andy about some sports later, and we'll be talking about the Chicago Democratic Convention. That's not that far away, folks, especially after that debate or that debacle, depending on how you viewed it. Suddenly, the Chicago Convention is going to be, it was already going to be a newsmaker, but now all eyes are going to be on the Chicago Convention, which means all eyes are going to be on Chicago. So my question is going to be, are we ready for that kind of international, not just national anymore, but international attention? And we'll discuss that as well. And then later in the show, Mick Kaler will come on to talk in the Pop Culture Club to talk about some of the topics going on in pop culture. So as I said, I always try when I fill in for Dean to fill this this 4 hours up with 5 pounds of radio baloney and jamming it into a 1 pound bag. So we've hopefully got lots in store, as well as always looking for your participation as well. 312. What is it? Is it, what's the number, Jack? I don't even, you know, everybody texts in now. I don't even remember what the phone number is.
312-981-7200.
Yeah, after, I'll write that down. Yeah, I mean, before, everybody used to call in, and you know, but now everybody likes to text. So the text lines are open at the same number, 312. What was it again? Tell me it again.
981-7200.
I'm not here enough to remember it like that. But anyway, so please, if, by all means, we encourage your participation, either on the phone, love to talk to you, or on the text line as well. Shawnee, are you all set to go?
I am all set to go.
Well, then let's pass it over to Dave Schwann, award-winning reporter Dave Schwann. It is the far-flung forecast.
Boy, what a setup.
Thank you. Well, hey, that's not bad.
Right into it. Listener. And we move right along.
Yes, sir.
Well, today we go, you might say, North by Northwest. Nothing to do with the movie.
My favorite movie. Oh, one of my favorite movies.
I love it. Nothing at all to do with the movie, but we do go north of Chicago and northwest to Minnesota, to southern Minnesota, to a city of Mankato, Minnesota. It is the county seat of one of the, but it borders three counties here, so it's the county seat of Blue Earth County, but the city also straddles Nicolet and Le Sueur counties in southern Minnesota. Population is 44,000, but we mentioned Mankato today because if you've been following the news, you may have heard this city in the news this past week, because there has been major flooding due to swollen rivers in the area there, particularly the Blue Earth River, which flows nearby, and that has caused severe damage to the Rapidan Dam there. And people are afraid that the dam may break entirely. It's already been damaged by the flooding, and they're very much on edge there in that area there, because if that dam goes, that could be really catastrophic in that area.
Well, see what happened in New Orleans when those levees broke.
Yes, my gosh. Absolutely. That's right. It's kind of the same thing. The Blue Earth River is a tributary of the Minnesota River, not the Mississippi. They're far enough east from the Mississippi. But at the same time, though, that's a big dam. And if you've seen pictures of it, the one of the sides has been ruptured and water is flowing around it. They've had some buildings that have been demolished, and a house fell into the river. So it's very serious up there. So.
Well, this is a serious far flung forecast today,
yeah, right? But but this story has been very much in the news, and like I said, they're continuing to watch this. They're by no means out of the woods yet with this flooding, and there is a flood warning for Mankato, Minnesota. It is sunny, though, high of 65, 72. Pretty much the same kind of weather we're having around here, minus the flooding.
Well, it is what? I mean, Minnesota is the state of what? 10,000 lakes?
10,000 lakes. It is also where the headwater is for the Mississippi River, which flows, of course, from there right on down to New Orleans.
You are quite the Mississippi River aficionado, aren't you?
Well, I don't know about an aficionado, but I've spent time driving along it. My mother grew up on the river town of Alton, Illinois. So when I was a kid, we always would go down to the river. There was an observation platform where you could watch the barges go through the lock and dam system there in Alton. That was just a great time.
Aren't locks the coolest thing on earth? We have been on river cruises.
Oh, you have to go through them with those boats.
Yeah, yeah. And we have gone to these locks, and I'm sure it's a really easy technology, but to watch how a huge bed of water is completely changed in its height is unbelievable.
Well, turn around and look out the window from your studio there. The same thing happens from the Chicago River going into Lake Michigan.
Oh, is there a lock over here?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
You've got to be kidding me.
No, I didn't. I always see the Ferris wheel, but
you cannot go east on the Chicago River to go into Lake Michigan without going through the lock system there.
So I'm looking at it out right there. So the lock is right, where is it? It's the straight.
Look to the right ahead of the Ferris wheel as just look
right
straight
down the
river.
Yeah, yeah.
And you will see a lock system there changes the elevation of the boats. You must go through there. There is no other way from the river.
We have been in the boats, on those river cruise ships. And we look out our window, and there's water.
Yeah,
I mean we're underwater, or vice versa. You see it drain.
Did you do the Mississippi River cruise?
Haven't done that. I have done the Nile and the Danube and the Rhine.
Oh, you've done the Danube and the Rhine.
Yeah, and the Nile was huge too. And all of a sudden, the boat pulls in, and then someone said, "Oh, we're in a lock now." And I was like, "Okay, whatever. Who cares, right?" And then I go out to the deck, and I'm like, "What the? This is better than a fireworks display. So cool! Yeah, I could sit in a lock forever. Just really, the whole idea.
We're going to put you in a boat then, and just let you sit there between the lock and the Chicago River and Lake Michigan.
Well, it's not even 5 feet. It's like 10, 50, 60 feet sometimes that they change the level of the water.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Right where you're there.
Yeah,
it's unbelievable.
So wait till you go through the Sioux Locks in far northern Michigan, right there on the U.S.-Canada border with those big ore boats that go through there. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, wow. I tell you, we take so much for granted today in terms of our technology. But the idea that we even, what I think is so great is the audacity to think that we could even change the height of the water. I love that. I love that bold ambition.
Civil engineering at work.
Yeah, my gosh. Well, thank you so much, Swanee, for the far-flung. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards this morning. But listen, anyway, we'll be back after this with our health segment with Dr. Jeremy Silver. No switching. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards this morning. But listen, anyway. We will be, throughout the show, blending in some of Dean's usual segments, as well as doing some things on our own today. So hopefully you will be with us through the entire show here till 1 o'clock. Happy Pride Day. Pride Parade kicking off in a little bit more than an hour or so, 11 o'clock from Broadway and Sheridan. And as I said, big day today in Chicago. Not only do we have the Pride Parade, always a major, major fun event in Chicago, but then later in the evening, talk about a fun event, Rolling Stones, Night 2 at Soldier Field. But right now, we've got some excitement on the phone. It's Dr. Jeremy Silver, the Medical Director of Emergency Medicine at Northwestern Medicine Kishwani Hospital. Good morning there, Dr. Silver.
Good morning, Jim. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. And the last time we talked, if you remember, we had some connection problems, so I'm going to keep my fingers crossed this time.
Same here. I think we'll be okay today.
Very good. In in honor, tribute, whatever you want to call it, of Pride Month, which June has been, and especially today, the culmination here in Chicago of Pride Month, the Pride Day Parade, I thought it might be interesting to give us a little update as to where we are in the overall treatment and hopefully working toward a cure in the HIV/AIDS world. This started in the 80s as a horrendous epidemic, and it has been a very controversial medical issue over the last 40 some years. But we are today in a period, it seems, that that people that with HIV now certainly are living long and healthy lives thanks to the advances that we've had in the medical technology world. And many AIDS groups are looking to hopefully eradicate AIDS by 2030. Not sure if that's an ambitious goal, considering that we're already at 2024. But just wondering, where are we right now in the world of AIDS treatment and HIV?
You know, I think you've summed it up nicely. It's been a sea change, and for those who are infected with the virus, it sort of is a golden era compared to where we were in the 1980s when HIV was a death sentence and most people had about a year to live following diagnosis, whereas today it's a chronic disease, and most folks with the virus, if treated properly, will live a full life and die of other causes. Now, HIV, just to remind those listening at home, is a virus that attacks the body's immune system. And so that's why it's such a tricky nut to crack, because the immune system is so very complex. And AIDS is sort of the kind of end result when things really go haywire in the immune system and kind of the terminal phase of the illness. But we've gone from having one drug and a lot of mainly public resistance to even wanting to dig our heads out of the sand and see this for what it was, to having pre-exposure prophylaxis. So a drug that you can take every day if you're at high risk for exposure to prevent getting the virus. We've gone from folks having just, as you mentioned, horrific, destruction of the immune system and rare cancers and horrible infectious diseases that ravage the body to a state where if you have an undetectable amount of viral load, then you're basically not able to transmit the virus. Undetectable equals untransmittable. So just a massive change, a massive shift, still work to do. Having the virus does increase the pro-inflammatory factors in the body, and so folks with HIV are more likely to develop heart disease and a variety of other conditions. So I think still more work to be done, but yes, there's definitely something to celebrate today.
And the thing that's interesting to your point, I mean, if you look back over the decades, as you said, in the 80s, sadly, when HIV first became prevalent, it literally was a death sentence. There was no cure. There was nothing to even try to suppress this. And then in the 90s, there were new advancements to slow the disease somewhat. And then I guess in the 2000s is when the AIDS, so-called the AIDS cocktail, came about, where there was a mixture of different drugs that people could have that it would at least suppress the virus. Ironically, many people might not know this, but Dr. Fauci, who has become such a controversial character due to COVID, was also a leading player in the AIDS dilemma or crisis, whatever you want to call it, right at the beginning, because he's always been working in infectious disease. So he played a major role in that as well.
He did. And I think that whole group of people, from the early sufferers to the more recent survivors, really owe a debt of gratitude to Dr. Fauci, regardless of what you might think of him recently with respect to the COVID pandemic. He oversaw the NIH and the development of these, quote, highly active antiretroviral drugs, which have essentially coalesced into a single pill that you can take every day and keep the virus undetectable in your body. So I think people will look back at him very differently, you know, 20, 30 years from now. You're right.
And because a younger generation now, those of us who've been around long enough to have seen when the AIDS epidemic began and what a horrendous disease it had and the impact that it had on especially on the gay community, but also on intravenous drug users as well. It wasn't discriminating, just like COVID. And it's gone through a lot of political and societal prejudices as well. But now, because we've been able to handle it, like you said, we've turned it into a terminal disease, into a chronic disease, which is huge. Younger people don't seem to be as aware of its dangers. And I think from what I understand in the AIDS world, in the HIV and AIDS world, the goal now is to remove that stigma of HIV and make sure that people are aware of it, make sure people get tested, and like you said, take some preventive drugs that are available to help prevent it, to basically make people more aware that this still is out there, it still can be dangerous, and to remove that stigma of, well, I'm not going to take an AIDS test or something like that. Is that sort of where we're at right now?
Well, I think so. And, you know, you see it in the emergency department. I think younger people are more willing to kind of to say, yes, I'd like you to test me when they've engaged in risky behavior, which, by the way, is essentially having sex without a condom. And sharing needles, of course, would be another risk factor. So I think that the stigma is changing. And I think young folks recognize, hey, look, you know, better to know and treat than to not know and essentially become a loaded gun, so to speak. I would definitely encourage testing if there's any question at all.
So is the AIDS cocktail now the used medication, or have we moved past the AIDS cocktail, which was a mixture of different medications?
Yeah, so there's really kind of two main approaches, without getting into the weeds. There's pre-exposure prophylaxis, which is a pill that one can take before being exposed, essentially before sex. And then there's post-exposure treatment, where you've been diagnosed and you're being treated with a pill. Now, it's not for everybody. It depends on a variety of factors. So, I would leave that to the infectious disease experts. But essentially, there's treatment available, and it comes in different forms depending on your characteristics as a person.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, I knew a few people, sadly, that contracted HIV and AIDS in the 80s and did die in their 30s, which was just terrible to see. And at the same time, I have a good friend who contracted HIV in the early 90s, and she is still alive and still leading a healthy life. So it really is an amazing road that the medical profession has been on, to not only focus on this, but to give people who have this disease, or HIV, the virus, it's certainly not the dire news that we had before. And hopefully the goal moving forward is to cure AIDS completely. So it sounds like we're on that road, at least, right, Doctor?
I think it's fair to say, and I think the bigger the more important message here is that we've decided that we're going to see everybody as a human. And when you see everybody as you see yourself, then the willingness to invest in public health infrastructure and treatments opens up significantly.
Dr. Jeremy Silver is joining us here in the health segment today. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards. We'll be back with Dr. Silver right after this message. No switching. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards this morning. And we are in the midst of our health segment today with Dr. Jeremy Silver, who is the medical director of emergency medicine at Northwestern Medicine Kishwaukee Hospital. And Doctor, you also wanted to talk today about some medications that might have different effects given the hot weather. We've been under some crazy weather of late, really hot, humid weather. And you wanted to talk about some medications and the effects that the hot weather can have.
Oh, yes, Jim, thanks for giving me a little pulpit here. You mentioned humidity. That's equally important. When you look at the news and you look at the weather, you often see a topic called the heat index, which essentially takes into account the humidity. And of course, humidity is a limiting factor on your body's ability to sweat. The more vapor pressure in the air, the less likely your body is to release the water in under your own skin. And so that creates an even higher effective temperature. And so when the temps, you know, get over 90 or the heat index gets over 90, folks need to be thoughtful about whether their medications may make it more difficult for them to function in that environment. And essentially, you have sort of two ways of regulating your temperature. Your brain regulates it, of course. Brain sort of tells your body what to do, and then your body reacts by dilating all those blood vessels, so the heat inside your body can transmit up to the skin level, and then your skin releases heat in the form of sweat, which then evaporates into the air. And the hotter it is, and the more humid it is, the harder it is for that sweat to get out. And so the stress of trying to function in that situation where you're trying to regulate your own temperature, particularly in those people who are elderly over 65 or those that are on a series of medications, can totally cause havoc. There's a series of drugs that I'll just, if I have time, I can go through very quickly if you'd like.
Yeah, we got a couple minutes if you can.
Sure. So number one, blood thinners. So drugs like Eliquis or Warfarin or Coumadin act to raise the body temperature and make it more difficult to release heat. Drugs like water pills, as people think of them, or diuretics like Lasix or even some blood pressure medications can interfere with fluid balance. Antidepressants and antipsychotics, which many people take, anything from Prozac, to Lexapro, to Paxil, Cymbalta, Effexor, and on and on and on, can lead to difficulty managing heat and overheating. Parkinson's drugs would be in the same category. Likewise, drugs that you might think are safe, quote-unquote antihistamines, so Benadryl or other decongestants like Sudafed, actually inhibit sweating, which, of course, can lead to overheating. I would mention that there are some classes of antibiotics that can make your skin more photosensitive, meaning that you're more likely to get a sunburn if you're taking any of the cyclines, tetracycline, doxycycline, et cetera. And then finally, non-steroidals, these drugs that are over-the-counter, Motrin, Aleve, Advil, all that class of medication can lead to decreased blood flow as they act on the kidneys. And can cause fainting and difficulty in the heat.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. When it gets to be in the 90s and humid, I have no problem sweating. In fact, I don't even have any problem sweating when it's 60. So
you're all set then, Jim. You have nothing to worry about.
Thank you so much. Dr. Jeremy Silver, I appreciate you taking your time on a Sunday to join us. He's the medical director of emergency medicine at Northwestern Medicine Kishwaukee Hospital. Thank you so much. Hopefully we'll talk soon again.
Jim, take care. Keep sweating.
Yeah, oh, believe me, that's no problem. Jim Toronto. Elton Jim filling in for Dean Richards this morning, but listen anyway. Wanted to talk to sports guy Andy Mazur today a little about what's going on in the WNBA.
Okay.
I think it's what a shift that has gone on in terms of interest and excitement in a league that's been around since 1997,
yeah.
And I guarantee you, a lot of people didn't know it was around that long.
That's true. I think something that has to do with it is the ascent of the college game as well, because there's a lot of folks that have followed some of these players over the last two or three years through their college careers, especially through the NCAA Women's Tournament, which has been broadcast now pretty much wall-to-wall on ESPN and other networks. You get a little bit of a sense that you want to follow people. I mean, same thing with the men's side. I mean, you look at some of the guys that played for Connecticut and got drafted the other night, Klingon and other guys of that nature. So I think that interest starts a little bit earlier than even these players get into the WNBA these days.
Well, to your point, and so obviously over the last several years, one of the best players, and it's not even this is not subjective, this is objective. She's put up the stats to prove it. One of the greatest college women's basketball players of all time, mm-hmm. is the current WNBA star, Caitlin Carter. And she broke all types of, I mean, didn't she break the all-time scoring record for the NCAA in general, men's and women's scoring? Isn't that correct? I believe I'm right on that.
Yeah, she did. I mean, yeah, and even, you know, Pete Maravich had a record.
Oh, I'm sorry, Clark. I'm sorry, yeah.
Had a record in college as well that he only played 3 years and did not have the three-point line. He scored over 3,600 points in his career at LSU. But, yeah, she, you know, she shattered a bunch of records. And, you know, her team was good. Not good enough this year to beat South Carolina, so they fell in the championship game this year. But yeah, I mean, and you know, she was at Iowa. They sold out arenas. They moved games to bigger places. To, you know, the Fever, which is what she plays for now, they've moved a couple of games as well to accommodate more fans. It's kind of cool to watch, and I think that, you know, that if somebody is going to take that, you know, that mantle, if you will, mantra of the league. And to be able to run with it, you know, she's a good candidate for it. I mean, but I don't think she's the only one.
No. But I think, and once again, I apologize. I said Caitlin Carter. It's Caitlin Clark. Sorry. Mm-hmm. But there's no question that she has generated an amazing amount of attention.
Yeah.
Bringing attention not only to women's college basketball, but actually helping to bring attention to women's sports in general. Mm-hmm. We've got young girls are wearing, you know, her jersey. She was the number one pick in the WNBA. And I find it strange why they're calling it the Caitlin, you know, Clark effect that it has. She's bringing people. They're selling out arenas, not of just 5,000 people, but of 15 and 20,000, which was unheard of for this league.
Oh, definitely.
And yet there seems to be some kind of a backlash against her from the players in the league standpoint, whether it's jealousy that she's getting all the attention. And then this from the outside world, talking about white privilege, where here's a woman who has put up the stats. She's earned everything. Nothing was handed to her. Mm-hmm. And I just find that the WNBA, it seems to me, is on the precipice of a great transformation. And it seems to be self-sabotaging itself.
So go back to something that Magic Johnson said recently. And if you go back to the early days, the early 80s in the NBA, the NBA finals were being played back on tape delay. Nobody was watching them.
Right.
Nobody cared. And, you know, until Magic Johnson and Larry Bird came in. And, you know, people have drawn similar lines to Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark. With the fact that, you know, the both have kind of burst out of the scene. One is Caucasian, one is African-American. And I think that, you know, Magic Johnson said that this does remind him a lot of him and Larry Bird, because the league was kind of at a crossroads. It was, you know, fledgling a little bit. Like I said, you know, games were being played on tape delay. And, you know, now there's interest in, because of Magic and Larry, things started to heat up a little bit, you know, and then people paid more attention, I think, because of that 1979 Final Four that was crazy between Indiana State and Michigan State, drew a lot of interest. And I think that kind of translated now to the fact that those two guys were in the NBA. They were top picks, and they had a rivalry even in the NBA with the Celtics and the Lakers. And now this is even more of a closer rivalry because it's geographically closer.
Right.
You know, it's Indianapolis and Chicago.
Yeah.
And, you know, one's a player that scores a lot. And I'll tell you what, Angel Reese gets a rap that, you know, she's this, you know, the bad boy kind of image with the Pistons, you know, back in the day when they were playing the Bulls.
Right.
But she scored eight straight double-doubles.
Yeah. I mean,
it's not like she can't play. And I think that's a problem that perception has kind of been there with her. Yeah, she plays the game hard. I mean, and she played the game hard in college as well. And yeah, they had a little bit of a rivalry there with the, you know, the thing that she waved her hand in front of her face and whatever that was a couple of years ago in the Final Four when LSU was beating Iowa. You know, I think that instead of people being critical of the whole thing, embrace it, you know, kind of steer into the skid, you know.
Well, that's the thing I don't understand. And if I was the commissioner, I mean, it seems to me, talk to anybody, especially you make a great point with the beginning in the 80s with Larry Bird and Magic mm-hmm. Johnson. And then go forward to the Michael Jordan effect,
right,
which completely transformed the game, mm-hmm. brought the game to around the globe. I mean, there's
international. Definitely.
I mean, I've gone to foreign countries today, and young kids are wearing Michael Jordan jerseys now.
Yep.
He hasn't played in how many decades already?
Yeah.
So his influence is still around. And ask any player who played in the Jordan era. They may have been competitive with him. I'm all for competition mm-hmm. and being competitive and rivalries. And like you say, there's no problem. But to get personal with it and to realize that there that Caitlin Clark is bringing attention to the league. Don't put that down. Embrace that. She can lift all boats. Talk to any player yeah. that played in the Jordan era, and he'll tell you how his salary increased, how his endorsement deals increased, because suddenly, like you said, people were paying attention yep. to the NBA.
Well, TV deals got bigger because people wanted to watch, and the league became much more valuable. Each team became much more valuable. And you could argue that that's the Jordan effect on things. I think if players in that era had it to do all over again and to kind of step back and look at their career from afar, they would be very happy with the fact that their salary was pretty much double, maybe even triple what guys like Magic and Bird were making early on in their NBA careers. And it's all because of the interest. And, you know, TV creates money and interest and advertising dollars and, like you said, endorsements. And I don't know if any of that becomes more fashionable or in vogue, not for, you know, Michael Jordan. I mean, I know that he and Isaiah Thomas had a little bit of a thing going there because I think Isaiah was a little more
jealous,
quote unquote, old school, if you will. And jealous is another good word, kind of freezing him out of an NBA All-Star game. And, you know, Michael right. Jordan, competitive as he is not going to let that go. And certainly made it his mission to show Isaiah that he was a better player. But you know, going back to the whole WNBA thing, this is kind of like the ground floor of an investment. You know, I mean, this is kind of a thing that we're looking at right now. And people that were hardcore WNBA fans are probably saying, "Hey, we've known about this all." Okay, yeah, you have. And I always give credit to those that have been to the trend before the mainstream has gotten to the trend. Because there's a lot of people out there that can tell you the entire starting lineup for this Chicago Sky team that won the WNBA championship a couple years ago. But there's a handful of people that are just coming to the party now, and it's because of the new influence into this league where there's a lot of interest. I mean, right. there's a lot that goes on. And you know, between the NIL money that those girls were making when they were in college to the fact that they're not making nearly what you would expect them to be making here in the WNBA. Some of them probably, I joke, took a pay cut, you know, from college to go to the pros. But right. that's not really the case. Yeah. But it seems like that on paper. But, you know, like I said, it's the ground floor of an investment. And I think this only gets better. Yeah. It keeps getting better because now there's young women around the world, especially around the United States, that are planning to go to college and planning to play basketball in college, knowing now that there is another outlet for them to go to when they're done playing college basketball.
Yes, exactly. There is a path. And, yeah. and to your point, exactly correct. I'm not putting down that the WNBA didn't have some great players and some trailblazers and some Hall of Fame and Olympic. I mean, there's
Rebecca
no question.
Lovell, Lisa Leslie. I mean, there's yeah. a bunch of players that were there well before. You know, Candace yeah. Parker and people that really set the example for what the league could and should be. But now the interest has been drummed up so much that there's a certain aspect and a certain group of fans that are new to the game that don't remember those names. And then, okay, that's fine, but yeah. then you learn about it.
Yeah, but like I said, I think that the team, every coach, every organization, if I was the commissioner of the WNBA, it's a woman named Kathy Engelbert, if I were her, I would have a meeting with every team. I would visit every team and say, look, folks, I understand, you know, as I said before, remain competitive, but we've got an opportunity here to take this league to new heights. I'll tell you, the perfect example is I'm not a big NBA basketball fan mm-hmm. watching any. I okay. don't really watch NBA basketball. You know what? I have watched all of the Fever and Sky games this year,
yeah.
and I watched the women's NCAA final. Yeah. I didn't watch the men's at all.
Hmm.
I've been watching more women's professional basketball in the last 4 months than I've watched NBA basketball in the last 10 years since Jordan retired. So that tells me just from my own, curiosity and openness to this, that there's something going on here. Don't kill it through petty jealousies. Explain to these players, yes, you know what? She's getting some attention now, but she's bringing attention. She's bringing eyes. She's bringing people, and they will start to discover you as well. Like you're saying, they'll if I watch a game, I see now Angel mm-hmm. Reese and the way she plays. Yeah. And so I say, hey, I like her too.
Well, to play devil's advocate with the fact that the WNBA commissioner and talking to teams, I think that the controversies are helping things. I mean, I think that the perceived rivalries are really helping things here, because people want to know what Angel Reese is all about now, with the fact that she and Caitlin Clark have been at each other for a little while here the last couple of years in college and also now into the WNBA. I mean, not to say that it's wrestling, because you try to punch up storylines, but this is good for the league. I think this is fine. This is healthy competition where maybe it's based in jealousy, maybe it's not. I mean, I don't really know what Angel Reese's thoughts on that whole thing, but she's proven to be a pretty good basketball player.
Oh,
and she always was. I think people are starting to realize that now.
As I said, more attention and more eyes on the game. Whoever is delivering that attention can't hurt anybody. We've got Kathy on the phone here. Welcome to the conversation, Kathy.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I am older, and I played, when in high school, we played half court. We couldn't cross the court. That was in the 70s. And I got so excited. My sister, my brothers all played basketball, but my sister, she got really good. And she went to high school, St. Scholastica, and got a scholarship to St. Francis in Joliet. So I've watched for a long time. And after, she was in the 80s, and she played a lot of basketball in leagues. But there was no place for anyone to go after college. So a bunch of her friends, they were relatives of the Fire Isles, and I don't know if you remember back that basketball dynasty on the North Shore with all the guys. I know I'm old. But they all went over to Europe and played, and then came back and still played in the area. So women's basketball has been there for a long time. And I'm just really excited to see what's going on with the NBA, because I went to one of the games when the Sky were winning that year.
Mm-hmm.
I went to one of the playoff games. Oh, it was so fantastic. Well, it was just so exciting to see so many people rooting women on.
Well, yeah, that's exactly right. Thanks for calling in, Kathy. You're seeing usually when Andy, you do sports on television.
Mm-hmm.
When you show highlights,
yeah.
Usually 2 or 3 years ago, when you showed some highlights from the Sky games, you would see a ton of empty seats.
Yeah.
And now you go, and then the best part is, it's not just women at the game; it's men and women. Everybody is embracing this game, and so I just think that they've got a rare opportunity, and I hope that they rise to the occasion as opposed to potentially reverting back to oblivion, because it could go either way at this point. I get your point about the rivalry, and that's mm-hmm. always great for sports.
It's healthy, yeah.
But I just hope that it does. I mean, I've seen watching some games, and they're fouling her really hard.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's competition, but
she's a rookie.
Yeah, and I get the whole, I get all that, but it seems to me there's something else going on here on the underbelly, and it's like, no, don't destroy this, because it may not come around again.
Yeah, I mean, and those of us that remember back in the day, the Chicago Hustle were in town, and they were playing at the Horizon, and they were playing other places, and there really wasn't a whole lot of interest in that league. But look at how we've changed our viewing habits now. I mean, you can pretty much find a game. If you want to find it, you can get it on your computer somewhere,
right?
And you can watch it. So there's a lot more ways to, as we say in the business, cum things, to be able to see things. If you want to see it, there's a place for it. And that certainly helps regardless of whether or not there's a perceived jealousy or not, because people are going to watch. People are starting to watch it a little bit, and I agree. You know, it's nice to see that there's diverse crowds at these games, you know, men, women, black, white, you know, whatever color, and it's fun to watch.
And as Kathy said, and as you said too, the greatest part of this is for overall women's sports in general, whether it's softball, whether it's lacrosse, whether it's basketball, whether it's soccer, that now there are pathways to professional careers, which never really existed before. Yeah. So I just wanted to touch base because I'm watching this going on. I'm excited to watch it, and I'm hoping that that they don't sabotage themselves. So fingers crossed. But I'm enjoying watching the WNBA these days. I'm really enjoying it. Thanks a lot, Andy. I appreciate the chat. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards here on the Sunday Morning Show. We'll be back after this. No switching. We are celebrating Route 66 here at WGN. There's no shortage of nostalgia and adventures to be had on the first 100 miles of the historic Route 66. And now through August 24th, the Illinois Office of Tourism is having the first 100 miles of Route 66 heritage corridor destinations. And WGN Radio is going to give you a chance to win. So for the sixth caller, you will get a $100 gift card to a featured attraction, shop, restaurant, museum, or business along Route 66, and a $100 Exxon Mobil gift card to fuel your Route 66 adventures. That's pretty cool. Route 66 starts right here downtown in Chicago. In fact, I was just downtown doing a museum day, and there was a sign. Route 66 begins here. So let's go for the sixth caller to win this Route 66 celebration gift pack. Caller number six. Right now, we're going to go to caller number Dave Schwann with the news. One of my favorite Rolling Stones songs. You got to roll me. Tumbling Dice. Mick and the boys could be listening to me as we speak. For all we know, Mick Jagger, Keith Richards, Ronnie Wood. You all listen to WGN when you're in town, don't you? If you do, welcome to our city. We know the Rolling Stones love Chicago. They were hugely influenced by Chicago blues. In fact, one of their first trips to the United States, they came to Chicago to Chess Studios right here in the South Side, because that's where all the great Chicago blues that influenced them was made, right here in our town. So it's great to have the Stones back here, and it's great to have Jim Petrago with me, who is an ultimate super Rolling Stones fan. Welcome to the show, Jim.
There's fever in the funk house now, Jimmy.
Oh, boy, you got to roll me. Did they do Tumbling Dice?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah. That's
a must.
How would you describe yourself as a super fan, as a scary fan, an obsessive fan? I should say Jim has literally been around the world, followed this band from country to country. It's really a great thing to see, as being a fan as I am of music. And in fact, I met Jim because he's also a big Elton John fan. That's how we met. So we've been friends for many years, seeing each other at Elton John concerts around the country and around the world. And then I find out that he's this huge Stones fan to boot.
Yeah, I got 114 in so far. That's nothing compared to a lot of the folks there. My buddy from Norway has 600 in, you know.
So 600.
When you asked about how I describe myself, I don't know. I'm kind of low on the totem pole as far as a lot of shows, but I didn't start till 94. I mean, my first show was 1994 in Wisconsin, Camp Randall.
And so here, the Stones have been around since the 60s. Why did it take you so long? What was the impetus?
Well, it was probably money. And, I mean, I went to some concerts here and there. I mean, I wasn't obsessed with concerts. I mean, I shouldn't say that, because we went to the Erie Crown Theater back in the day and saw a Poplar Creek bunch of shows here and there, but nothing obsessive, you know, this was Camp Randall in Wisconsin, first time, third row, Keith side, and then addicted from there.
And I should say that the Jim is also would you consider yourself a professional photographer or a hobbyist?
I would say I'm a advanced hobbyist. How's that?
Yeah,
I'm
advanced
not getting
hobbyist.
Paid. I'm not getting paid for this. So.
But the great
Although
thing.
I did get paid for one. I got paid for one stone. I got paid $500 by a designer out in L.A. because they wanted one of my files, and it's, so I got paid once.
Oh, nice. I should mention, I remember a few years ago here in Chicago at Navy Pier, they had a huge Rolling Stones exhibition. And I went to see it, and right toward the end, they had a bunch of different photos, and you had one of your photos in the Rolling Stone exhibition.
Yeah, that was the one from Comiskey Park. It was, that's back in the days of 5-megapixel cameras, so the photo itself wasn't great, and it totally surprised me. I had no idea it was going to be there.
But the great thing is, and as I said, I've learned this because I've seen Jim at many Elton John concerts. Jim is old school photographer. He's not just using your iPhone 15 with the great pixelated capabilities on the phone. No, Jim's old school. You still sneak in big cameras with big lenses somehow.
Somehow.
Every so often I'll see Jim at a concert and I'll say, so did you get it in? And he goes, here it is. And it's like, oh, how did you get that in? So that's
well, it's whatever.
But
you do what you have to do.
Definitely. And you go onto Jim's Facebook page and you have taken some, just jaw-dropping photos. You're always up close. And then with those giant camera lenses you bring, you could see every crease and crag in Mick's face. It's amazing.
Okay.
No, hey, we should all be as in great shape when we're 80 years old, almost 81, as Mick Jagger. And so you went on Thursday. So now what show is this? What number show is this will be tonight?
Today will be 115.
115. So give us a little quick review. How was Thursday night's show?
Well, obviously, every show is when somebody asks me what's my best show, it's always the last one, right?
Exactly.
So it's nice to get what's different about this tour is the new music. I mean, the album has done so well. If people sit and listen to it like we used to listen to an album, which is not just once through on Spotify, but sit there and listen to an album 6-7 times like you did as a kid, and then the music became part of you, right?
Exactly.
So if you do that, you get 5, 6, 7 songs that are very strong on that album, and they're rotating them through. Probably 6 different songs off the album they're rotating through. They always play the big single that came out first, "Angry," and then they rotate a bunch through. And Keith gets his song in there now, and
Keith is doing a couple songs now, isn't he? He's doing "Little TNA" and "Happy" and
Mick had some voice problems there, so they had to change some stuff up, and they gave Keith 3 songs. Well, he's hung on to his 3 songs now. he's not giving them up, and I got to tell you, he looks better and plays better than 10, 15 years ago. I mean, that's my opinion. I mean, he's very active. He's smiley all over the place. You can see that from my photos. And he's really into it. And it's really great to see that these guys at 80 years old. And the last thing Jagger does is during the final encore, he runs from one end of the stage from out on the walkway all the way to the back. I mean, I know he's trying to make a statement there, say, hey, I can still do it till the end of the show, but he's doing it,
and he's still doing the chicken walk, right? Isn't he still doing the little bobbing of the head?
A little bit. I mean, yeah. You certainly know it's him there. You probably know it's him from the way back in the rafter seats. You know, where the other people sit, Jim, not you and me.
Yeah, no. Well, and we should mention that he was talking about the album. The album is called Hackney Diamonds. It's their newest album. It came out late last year. It went to number one, I think, when it came out. There's been a lot of different, iterations of it since then with some live songs built in there. Of course, Lady Gaga has a song on there. Now they do that. What's the song that Lady Gaga sings on from the album?
Sweet Sounds of Heaven.
And they do that. They're doing that in concert, aren't they?
They've done it Well, they've done it to all the shows except the ones where Mick had voice issues. So that's a very strong Mick song. So they kind of backed away from that, I believe, for a few. And that was noticeably bad, you know, because a lot of people, especially the regulars like myself, we loved that song. It's just great. And they did it the other night in Chicago, and I'm sure they'll do it tonight, I think, you know. I shouldn't say I'm sure, but I think they will. Yeah.
Talking to Jim Petrega, who is a huge Rolling Stone fan. He's going to his 115th tonight?
115
tonight. For people going to the concert, I had a couple of texts from people who are heading down. What's the situation down there in terms of crowds, of traffic? Do you suggest that people get down there early?
Well, I believe the everything opens up at 6, and there's no reason to be standing there up, in my opinion, you know, with a whole line of people a block and a half long at each entrance. You know, it doesn't make any sense to me. But traffic, I didn't have any issues. I stayed right down there, so I don't know what the traffic issues. I'll find that out tonight because I'll be driving down tonight. But I'm sure with all the stuff from NASCAR and everything else, construction and everything, that it's going to be interesting. And you know, I'm not sure you can necessarily go by your GPS because the GPS doesn't know some of these things are closed up, you know.
And we should say, Jim doesn't live in the Chicago area. You live about, what, how many hours out of Chicago do you live? I don't want to say exactly where you live because people will.
90 miles.
90 miles. So that's a good hour and a half, depending on traffic. But he still comes
out. Or a bad hour and a half.
Yeah, right. He still travels to everywhere. Like I said, I've seen him all around the country. I don't know if I've ever seen you at Elton. Have I seen you at an Elton concert outside of the United States? I don't know if I have.
No.
But I have seen.
I don't think I've done that before. No.
Yeah, but
close. I almost did a couple 2 years ago. Almost did that.
Yeah, but I have.
Same when you did it up near in. It was in England, I think. And I didn't know you were going to be there. Otherwise, I probably would have got there because I was in London at the time.
Oh, really? Yeah, I went to Watford at that time. Yeah, but
yeah, that was it. That was the one.
That was a couple of years ago. But so in terms of, and I should say too, like I said, I've seen the Stones about I'd say 4 or 5 times. I think the first time you saw them was in '94. 94. I don't even want to give away the year. Because it's so long ago. I'm just going to say, I went to the Tattoo You Tour. That's how long ago I saw them. I was in a play with a guy recently, a younger guy, and he had a Rolling Stones t-shirt on. And so I said, hey, are you a Stones fan? He's like, oh yeah, this was last summer. And he says, oh yeah, I can't wait to see him at Soldier Field. And he said, I've seen them. I said, well, when was the first time you saw them? And he said, 2005, you know, like, wow, I've been like he's been a fan a long time. And I said, I've seen them over the decades. And so I didn't.
Yeah, but you need to be there tonight. You need to be there tonight.
I know. I feel weird that I you know, it's such an event, and who knows? I mean, at this age, you know, even though they're in great shape, you know, you never know what can happen. And Mick certainly has had a few. Even though he's in great physical shape, he has had some heart problems with a heart valve, and you know, you get to be 80, you know, anything can happen.
Yeah, things happen. Things happen when you're 80.
Yeah,
well,
but
if you can't do that one, go down to Thunder Ridge there in Missouri and do that one in July.
Yeah, I should. I mean, I really should see it because, I mean, I'm such a music fan. And I do like the Stones. Don't get me wrong. But I have to say when there's the battle between the Beatles and the Stones, I still go to the Beatles side. Yeah. Sorry, Jim.
Well, I'm not. Hey, I like Beatles stuff too. You know, I go see McCartney a lot. I was hoping to, you know, he's touring now. So I guess I can't remember overseas somewhere.
Yeah.
But if he comes back, I'll go see him again probably.
Yeah,
he's got voice issues, but whatever.
Yeah, he does have some voice issues. To your point, how does Mick sound? How is Mick sounding? Because he did have
they sounds fantastic. But in all honesty, the Stones people know how to bury people in the mix where. You know, with McCartney, they don't bury him in the mix at all.
I know.
Sometimes on certain things, and it comes off like nails on a chalkboard. Sometimes, you know, you know when you see him, you're looking at an icon, right? So you're there, your experience is great, but it's like, ugh,
Yeah.
And Mick does really well. They do that really well. So he's got good backup people, and he hits the important stuff. You don't even notice it. You know, you don't even notice the backup people are carrying things sometimes. You know? Sometimes.
Talking to Jim Petrego, who is a super Rolling Stones fan, he went on Thursday night. And as you would, I always ask when people say, well, which Elton John show are you going to? And I say, well, how many are there? And so, and that's the same way it is for Jim with the Rolling Stones. He saw them on Thursday. He'll be back there tonight. As I said, what an energetic day today in Chicago. In about 10 minutes, the Pride Parade will be kicking off. And then in the evening, we got the Rolling Stones at Soldier Field. Wow, Chicago is a cool place to be today. I'm talking to Jim Petrego, who is going to let us know a little bit about a little bit more about the Stones and what we might expect if you're going to. Tonight, so hang in there. I am Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards, but listen anyway. We'll be back with more Stones talk after this. No switching. Jim Toronto with you here at WGN Radio, 7:20 a.m., filling in for Dean Richards this morning. Hope you've been listening anyway. That's the Rolling Stones. That's one with Mick, or with Keith on lead vocals from the Tattoo You album, little TNA. I've got Jim Petrega on the phone with me, who will be at the Stones concert tonight at Soldier Field. I should tell you, Jim, I'm a big Ronnie Wood fan, too.
Oh, good deal. Yeah, yeah. He's fun to watch. He has a really good time. You know, his little daughters, who are, what, 7 or 8 nowadays, I think, that they were at the show the other night, I believe, and then they wore the headphones, and he tossed, you could see it on my Facebook, he tossed a pick from up on the stage, I mean, way high up on the stage, down there, and the one little daughter caught the darn thing. It was amazing.
Oh, I saw that on your Facebook page. That was his daughter?
Yeah, that was his daughter.
Yeah, she caught it. She caught it with one hand. With one hand. It was great.
I know. It's like she had some practicing since birth.
I actually, I own two Ronnie Wood lithographs. He is he's an excellent artist, you know, a painter. And I own a lithograph that he's done of Bob Dylan and of Pete Townsend.
Yeah,
and they
he does the set lists every after every show as well, and they sell those as lithographs on the website. So he'll do a fancy set list of every show.
Yeah,
that's pretty interesting.
And his background with Faces and everyone else, what a great addition to
absolutely.
That band. Now over, I mean, he's been a since Mick Taylor left the band in the 70s, he's been a fixture.
Late 70s, yeah.
Yeah. But in terms of the concert now, you know, you mentioned something, so I find it interesting. When you're a diehard fan like Jim is, and as I am of Elton, but of a Stones fan. So in an Elton concert, we all know you have to stand and sit on the left side of the stage because that's where his piano is. So that's where you got to sit.
Always.
So now in a Stones show, since everybody's all over the place, Mick is prancing around all over the stage like a hummingbird. But where for a Stones diehard Stones fan, where is the sweet spot for you?
So you have the walkway that divides the stage right from one side to the next. Then there's two. What they call pits, and you stand there. There's about 400 people in each pit. So one is the left side is Ronnie's side, the right side is Keith's side, because Mick is everywhere, right? So that's how it's figured out. And I used to always be on Ronnie's side because when Charlie Watts was with the band, the symbol on the other side would block his face.
Oh.
I'm all about taking pictures.
Right.
I'm trying to get the four of them at the time in the shot. The only way to do that was be on the other side. So I kind of graduate to that side. But in Cleveland 2 weeks ago, I was on Keith's side. You know, and you get a different perspective, obviously a little bit. But but Keith comes over on the other side. Ronnie goes over on the other side. So it really doesn't matter necessarily, just as long as you're down close enough. Whatever, as you well.
Oh, I know how that is. I mean, at this point, after seeing any concert, I just saw Bruce Springsteen in Columbus, Ohio, back in April, and I waited out in line to get in the mosh pit at the front for literally 15 hours. I sat outside waiting to do it. So I know all about that. I got a couple of questions for you from some texters from 847. Who was the opening act on Thursday, and do you know who the opening act is tonight?
I do, and that was a good thing you mentioned that. It was the other night. It was Levrette. It was a like a blues woman. I don't know how else to say it. And she was up and down the walkway. You could tell she was a little up in age. I don't know what the answer to that is, how old she was. I don't want to disparage her at all, but whatever. But and she was okay. But tonight is Lanny Wilson.
Ah, nice.
So that's a big deal. Now, she did a song on the Stoned Country album. She did one. I think she did Can't Always Get What You Want. So I don't know if she would join them on something like this, but it wouldn't be a terrible big surprise if she did, you know.
And we should say, mention also, someone 630 texted in. Don't forget, yesterday, talk about having rock royalty in the city. We've got the Rolling Stones here with Thursday and tonight at Soldier Field. And yesterday at Ravinia, The Who's Roger Daltrey played. So
last night I saw REO. So
oh, you did? Oh, wow! So there you go. You gotta love 157.
I didn't know Matt Bissonnette was playing with them.
Yeah, he's on tour with them. Yeah, he's the bassist. Yeah,
totally surprised me.
Yeah, I'm a big Who fan as well. As I said, I've got a Ronnie Wood lithograph of Pete Townsend. Love Pete Townsend. Love Roger Daltrey. Nice. Love The Who. As I said, my holy trinity. And Jim, I'm sorry about this, Jim. I hope we'll still be friends. But but if you ask me, the three great rock British invasion rock bands of the 60s, you know, I would put them in this order, Jim. I'm sorry, but I go Beatles, Who, and Stones. Sorry.
That's okay. It's like Mick said the other night. He goes with the debate. He was talking about people voting, and the only debate in Chicago is between Deep Dish and Tavern Style.
Perfect. Nice job, Mick.
I know.
Getting into the whole Chicago spirit. Perfect.
And that's the way I look at the Beatles Stones thing.
Right, exactly.
You know, sometimes whatever. Yeah. Absolutely. You can like both, man. Yeah. You like both.
Well, I'll tell you, I appreciate your passion. You're a great guy. I've come to know you and your wife, and I love seeing you at every concert we see you. Jim Petrega, who will be at the Rolling Stones concert tonight, number 115 at Soldier Field, to see Mick and Keith and Ronnie and the rest of the Rolling Stones. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a great time tonight, Jim.
I will. Thank you, bud. Thanks.
Jim Tirano with you this morning at WGN Radio, 720 AM, filling in for Dean Richards this morning. Hope you are listening anyway. The Pride Parade has, at least according to its schedule, should have kicked off already. It's 10 minutes in, so if you're out at the Pride Parade today, power to the people. In fact, the theme for the Pride Parade this year is Pride is Power. So power to the people today if you're out at the parade having a good time, being who you are. I should say that I've got some friends who are going out there today, and they always come back with some crazy stories. The Chicago Pride Parade is one of the great events in this city, certainly promoted. It's going to be interesting to see what the reactions will be this year. It has been somewhat curtailed in terms of the amount of floats. It's been rerouted for better traffic flow. It started an hour earlier, I believe, or a little earlier, so perhaps maybe to get the neighborhood back to normal after the parade goes. But always a very important and a proud parade, for sure. If you're out there, have a good time. And as I said, some people might be doing a double header today. You go right from the Pride Parade, you hang around in the downtown area, and then you shuttle over to Soldier Field and watch Mick Jagger and the Rolling Stones. Chicago, in the summer, one of the best places to be. Dave Schwann, I needed to talk to you about something real quick. I know you are a seasoned journalist, shall I say. A listener.
Salt and pepper, a little spice, some seasonings.
Oh, what's your favorite? What would you say is your favorite seasoning?
Oh, wow. You know what I use a lot on a lot of different types of meats and salads is this Old Bay spice.
Oh, yes, I know what you're wanting. Yeah,
put it on fish. It works great on fish. It works great on chicken. And then a number of years ago, when some friends of mine and I were in New Orleans, one of the best dinners I ever had was at the Paul Prudhomme restaurant, K-Paul's,
oh, right.
which I think is closed. But the seasoning that they used for the blackened Cajun-style steaks and meats, that's a great concoction.
I think he used to sell that.
They did.
Yeah, because I remember we bought that because I used to watch Paul all the time. Yep. He passed away a few years ago.
Right, right.
But yeah, I used to have his little spice.
Yeah, yep. And then another friend got me a New Orleans cookbook that has a recipe to make your own type of seasoning. It has cayenne pepper in it. Ah. It has bay leaves, all types of things. And it can be pretty potent, but it works well, again, on fish, especially on tuna, grilled tuna. That one works.
So who knew that your nickname really should be Dave the Raging Cajun Schwan?
No, far from it. Far from it.
I guarantee.
I love the food.
I guarantee.
Thank you, Justin Wilson.
Yeah, remember him?
I love Justin Wilson.
What was his, he was the what cook?
I think he was called the Cajun cook.
Yeah,
he was the Cajun cook.
Yeah, the Cajun cook. Remember,
but he did a stand-up comedy thing a lot for years down there.
Yeah, I think he was a comedian first, and then he got into the
cooking.
Yeah, and he was probably way ahead of the curve. Too bad he was old at the time, because now, Mike, you know, he passed away many years ago, but he had a very popular cooking show in the 80s and 90s.
Yes, he did.
And he used to wear those overalls.
And he would always tell jokes during the show.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I guarantee, you got to have a slogan.
Mm-hmm.
You got to have
a
slogan.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
I guarantee.
But I wanted to just mention something real quick, because I know that you are, I didn't know how seasoned of a,
maybe burned.
Yeah. Now, ultimately cinnamon.
Cinnamon's great.
I love cinnamon.
Yeah, sure.
But I was introduced a few years ago to Herbes de Provence. Herbes de Provence, which is a French thing, I guess.
I think so.
Have you ever tasted it? I love it.
And I've heard of it. No, I have not. I've not tasted
it. Try it out. I never heard of it. A friend made, I can't remember what she made. And I was like, wow, what is this spice? And now it has become my favorite spice. I even get Herbes de Provence mustard.
Like a
designer mustard. It has it in there. And anytime I see any kind of a food that has that in its title as well, because it's
that out.
Oh, yeah. So that's my favorite spice. But anyway, I just wanted to say, I was getting a few texts when you did your far-flung.
Yes.
A few people, and I know that I'm just saying this to, because I know you are a journalist who likes to get the facts.
Right.
Many people were saying that the pronunciation of that is Mankato.
Mankato. Yeah. That's what we said.
That's what I thought, but I got a lot. I don't know if you said Mankato.
Mankato, yeah.
Yeah, maybe you said Mankato, but everybody was like,
inadvertently,
But it's just so you know. I just wanted to let you know it's Mankato.
Right.
In case you ever do that one again.
Well, but you know what? We may be talking about just considering with the situation with that dam up there.
That's true, yeah. So this
could be a big problem.
That
everybody is very nervous about that.
Yeah, so just a little, what I love about WGN listeners, they are not afraid to tell you what they think. And boy, oh boy, do I know that.
We have the best listeners out there, though.
Yeah,
we really do.
You know, and everybody, they were sending that to you, that text to you, as not as anything negative, just saying, let Dave know that it is pronounced Mankato. Yeah,
right.
So just wanted to let you know that, because as I said, now, as you said, which is correct, that could be in the news in the next couple of days.
Yes, it has been.
Yeah, but so, even more so if the dam breaks, as they say.
The latest story I heard regarding that situation up there was there was a family that had run a store for many, many years that was right on the riverfront, and they had no choice but for the government to buy the property and demolish the store because the water is that close to it. And given the fact that buildings have been washed into the river with this dam breakage there, they had no choice but to evacuate the people and raise the building.
You know, it's
very sad.
It's going to be I think in the next 15 or 20 years, I mean, you know, whatever your political views are, it's hard to argue that the weather is changing. whether you want to call it global warming or whatever, but there's no question that we're getting different types of weather. And, you know, so much of our infrastructure has been based on the weather patterns of the last 100 years or so, with homes close to water.
Yeah.
Homes in near wildfires now, you know, out in forested areas, up near mountains, and now we're seeing these mudslides and these wildfires and now these floods. And it's a question of, do we continue to rebuild in the same place, or do we have to start to make some decisions to say, you know, this is no longer a livable place?
Yeah, well, one of the stories that we saw during the week in the Mankato area along the Blue Earth River, given the fact that they've had the flooding in that region, was several of the people who sadly lost their homes due to this said that we can't rebuild here. We're not going to do
it.
Yeah. And more people are saying that in various other areas. And you probably would remember the floods of 1993
along certainly.
The Mississippi.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll never forget driving through the Davenport, Iowa area there. Fortunately, we were on one of the big bridges that spanned the Mississippi, but I looked down and was familiar with a beautiful park, or what was supposed to be a beautiful park, along the riverfront in Davenport. It was submerged, totally submerged.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just that the rivers are flooding; they're encroaching more, and what was once safe areas. And this is nothing new. In fact, I mentioned earlier that my wife and I.
No, the flooding is nothing new. We see this in the springtime here.
But they move back, or they move back in, or they rebuild the house, and then it floods again.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, when do we decide that this is just not a good place to have a house anymore?
Let's move away.
Yeah, you know, my wife and I went to Egypt a couple of years ago, and we went to this area called Abu Sambal, I believe. I can't remember it off my top of my head, but it's even more impressive than the pyramids, if you can believe that. It was built by Ramses, and they had to move this entire structure. They literally moved stone by stone this huge temple 600 feet farther back because it was flooding. And they literally took it stone by stone because they said, we can't keep it here any longer. It'll be destroyed by the changing of the tides and the changing of the ocean of the rivers.
Right.
And so you're hearing about all this destruction that happens to the people that are living on these river on the edges of the river. I'm sure it's great to wake up in the morning and look at that water, but you don't want to have it in your basement or your living room. It's good when it's farther away. And so, hopefully, that's something that people are going to have to start to make some decisions on. I got a text here from 608 that says you can still buy those Paul Prudhomme seasonings.
Can you? Good.
Yeah.
Good.
And he mentions, or
it works great on steak and fish.
Yeah. Well, this is so, and he's saying that he still loves that one, or she, I'm not sure if it's a man or a woman. But they also mentioned something called Montreal steak seasoning. Have you ever heard of that?
No, I haven't.
No.
It would probably be kind of similar because that's French based. Cajun cooking is French based also.
Hmm. Yeah. So the Montreal steak seasoning, I have to look that up.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway. So I just want to let you know that moving forward, for your files, it's Mankato.
Got it.
All right.
Wrote it down.
Very good. That, of course, was a Lissiger-winning reporter and soon-to-be Grand Marshal of the Skokie 4th of July Parade. Dave, I think I'm more excited for you than you are.
Well, I'm definitely excited.
No, but I mean, I love, you've got such a nice demeanor. And I was talking about this, and you said, oh, yeah, it's going to be fun.
Well,
and
it is.
I know. No, but I'm just saying, but you're very low-key at times. And I'm like, how cool is this going to be? Are you going to have a hat? Are you going to wear a sash? Are you going to be in a thing? And you're like, yeah, it's going to be nice. But I have a great time because I think that's a great honor.
It is a great honor. And boy, the people that I've met and talked with up there just could not possibly be nicer.
And you get to go to
they're very proud of what they have, and justifiably so there. You know, it's
Skokie has a great history.
Parade there. It's going to be a wonderful day. I'm really hoping the rain just goes to our south, maybe.
I heard it might
not
be rainy,
but all the parades, plural, that are going to be taking place.
Yeah, it might be rainy on 4th.
And then the fireworks that night.
Yeah.
So let's hope that the weather patterns have a change of heart.
And then being at the head of the parade, you get to then go to the viewing stand.
Yeah.
Now, you don't vote on any of these, do you?
Oh, no.
You're just going
to. No, we're there to observe and really enjoy the parade, just like everybody else standing along the way. Sure.
And you're going to be in the convertible. Will you be next to Miss Skokie?
I guess if there is a Miss Skokie. That would be nice.
That would be fun. That would be nice.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, thank you. Thank you for sharing that, and have a great time on 4th of July.
Very much looking forward.
You know what? You might just bring a poncho. Bring a rain poncho just in case.
then I'll have to cover up my WGN shirt that I'm wearing for the occasion.
Well, ask Marlene if she can make you a WGN poncho.
Poncho.
There you go.
Okay.
On your journey down the Mother Road, stop into the Route 66 Bar and Grill. Or is it Route 66? I think it's Route. What would you say, Dave? You've driven on it, Dave.
Yeah, I say Route.
Route.
Either way is correct. Route or Route.
Because didn't the song Get Your Kicks on
Route
66?
Yeah, but you could say it either way.
Written by Bobby Troop.
Bobby Troop, that is correct.
Yes, who used to be on many episodes of Dragnet and Emergency.
That's right.
Yes. Who would have thought that he wrote Route 66?
Well, the story goes that he and his wife were actually driving on 66 or out on the road somewhere, and she came up with that catch line, "Hey, Bobby, get your kicks on Route 66.
Yeah, wasn't that Julie London? Wasn't that his wife? Because she was in Emergency, too.
It may have been, or maybe, you know,
a previous wife. Okay.
But the song goes way back.
Oh,
I got that on a 1950s album with Nat King Cole.
Yeah, I'll get your kicks on Route 66. Anyway, I'll start over again. On your journey down the Mother Road, stop into the Route 66 Bar and Grill for some comfort food with a twist. Known for their homemade pizzas and appetizers and mouth-watering burgers, there is something for everyone to enjoy at this legendary Wilmington eatery at the Route 66. I'm going to say Route and Route. I'll go both ways. Route 66 Bar and Grill. You can catch the game inside on one of our 10 TVs or enjoy live music on a summer night on the outdoor bar and in the outdoor bar and grill patio and garden. Check them out on Facebook at Route or Route 66 Bar and Grill. As I said, my wife and I came downtown a few weeks ago. We did a museum day. A Chicago Museum Day. I hope if you're in Chicago or in the suburbs, you should take advantage of some of the great, great museums that we have here in Chicago. We did a doubleheader. We started the day by going to the Art Institute and to see the new Georgia O'Keeffe exhibition there. And we spent a couple hours at the Art Institute. We're members at the Art Institute.
I have heard that's a great
exhibition. Oh, it is so. I love George O'Keeffe. I first experienced her here by as a young kid going to the Art Institute. Many of her great works are on display all the time at the Art Institute. And I remember seeing in the 80s or early 90s an exhibition. And this is just about the time, the majority of the pieces are just about a small time that she lived in New York.
Right.
And so there's pictures of the skyscrapers in that Georgia O'Keeffe style. If you haven't seen it and you're a fan of Georgia O'Keeffe, Dave, you definitely should go see it.
And also I recommend the Georgia O'Keeffe Museum in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Then take a tour of her house, which was way up secluded in the mountains outside Santa Fe.
Yeah, they said
in what they call the high desert.
Yeah, they said in the exhibition that her and her wife, Alfred Stieglitz, we were in New York for a while, and then ultimately she was going to the Southwest to get, you know, she does that, the famous, you know, cow skull paintings that she does. And for a while there, many people don't know that she went to Santa Fe and in the Southwest and dug up these bones of these animals, like, the cow heads and things like that. And she shipped them back to New York
to paint them.
So many of these rustic, Southwest images of these skulls of these animals, and they just ooze, Western life and the Southwest, and they were literally painted in New York in a hotel, in a studio in her hotel room in New York. But if you like Georgia O'Keeffe, or if you only heard of her, and you want to get some exposure, go to the Art Institute. I think the exhibit is there until September, and you will enjoy that. And then we went to the Adler Planetarium to take in a few stars and planets. And then, really, though, the main reason was to enjoy the 50th anniversary presentation in their immersive theater of the Pink Floyd Dark Side of the Moon album. It's a video and audio experience in that round immersive theater that they have. I think it's the Granger Theater. They played the entire album with all these visuals. And there were some times where you didn't even need any legalized marijuana for your head to bend a little. I'll tell you, there were some amazing, amazing images that went with the music, the great Dark Side of the Moon album, which last year celebrated its 50th anniversary. That presentation is extra at the Adler Planetarium. But I'll tell you, if you're a Pink Floyd fan, it's great to hear the music in that setting and to see the images that go that went along with it in this film. It is an extra charge, but it's worth the time. So we had a great time just doing a museum day in the city. Hopefully, there's so much to do here in the summer, and a lot of times people forget that Chicago is a destination for other people. So why don't you make it your destination sometimes? We take it for granted. Oh, I don't want to go downtown. It's so busy. But people come here to go downtown. And now that the Bean is open, you can go see that again. Millennium Park is always fun. But yeah, we've got some great museums here. And I tell you, I think it was the first time that I'd been to the Adler Planetarium since I went there as a kid on a field trip. It's been that long. And so well, I was happy that the Pink Floyd thing we took me there. Anyway, we need to take a break, Jack? Oh, I thought we took one. I'm sorry. Okay, let's take a break real quick. No switching. It sure is. Beautiful day today. I know tomorrow's July, right? So got to get out my Santa and his reindeer for my Christmas in July decorations. Boy, it's July already. What happened to June? Wow. I remember June 1st. I've always joked with my wife. I always say June 1st is the end of summer, because as soon as June starts, it seems like the summer flies by. The first month is already gone. We're clutching on to the last day of June here. But yeah, tomorrow's July. And I don't know how some people felt about the recent weather dome. And in fact, in about 12:30, we're going to talk to Bill Snyder of WGN TV Weather Department about our weather. Not only give you a little preview as to what might be coming on 4th of July. I know Dave was talking about a potential rain on 4th of July, which would be kind of a bummer when you think about everybody enjoying the holiday. And especially, some people might even be getting Friday off, with 4th of July landing on a Thursday. People may be even either getting that day off from a employer that's a little generous, feeling in the generous spirit, or maybe people take the day off to get a real extended weekend there. So hopefully 4th of July we can avoid any of the rain. Like I said, we'll be talking about that. But I also want to talk about that heat dome. Now, obviously, today the heat dome is gone. It's actually in the 60s, which is amazing when you think about June 30th, when we had 90s and almost hundreds and over hundreds, and the way it felt for so many days in a row. I know everybody looks forward to the hot weather. I get it. I understand that. But in fact, the other day it was in the mid 70s. And I was just walking outside, and then in the evening it was beautiful and cool, had all the windows open. And I just said, for the summer, there's nothing that beats that 73, 74, you know, temperature during the day. I know people love to go out to the beach and soak up the sun and get in the heat. I get that. We get, you know, so few months of that here in the Chicago area, especially. Although, I mean, it's been in the 80s in September now. I mean, it's no longer in the 40s and 50s or 60s even in September. We're still in the 70s and 80s and sometimes 90s to the end of September. So we're getting a little extended summer too, but I understand that you like the hot weather. I get it. I used to. But man, I'll tell you, I walked out today on my way to the studio today, and oh, the sun was out. It was gorgeous. In fact, Dave Schwann had come over to look into the studio here because we're right off the lake, right near Navy Pier. We can see the Ferris wheel from here. And the sun at like 8:30 or so was so bright, and it was cutting through some clouds that were over the lake, and it was the sun on the lake. It was almost like it was jumping, and Dave was like, "Man, I want to get a picture of that. It was beautiful." But I love the temperature this morning, and I don't know what it is out there right now. I'm assuming it's still in the upper 60s, lower 70s. But boy, I tell you, I can't. I'm wearing my hooded sweatshirt today and loving it. I know it's summer. I know it's going to get cooler before we know it. I know things go like this. The summer's over. But whew, man, I just love today's weather. I wish every day was 66. Oh, I'm doing a promotion for Route 66. I'm not doing that on purpose. That was just a slip of the tongue. But no, I just love today. I know it's not swimming weather or beach weather or pool weather or laying out weather. I get that. But oh, it was so hot in that heat dome. That's why I want to talk to Bill Snyder a little later. Speaking of Christmas in July, I go all out when it comes to Christmas decorations at the house. It is literally a Santa and snowman wonderland in our home during the Christmas holidays. And here's something very cool. We are going to be giving, we got a lot of cool things to give away. What's going on, Jack? Why do we have so many gifts to give away today? Wow, we're giving away Route 66, sure. And now we're giving away a Tree Time exclusive Christmas in July blowout sale VIP private party on July 11th, right smack dab in the middle of the month. I'm sure it won't be 66 on July 11th. I'm sure it's going to be in the 90s again. But if you want to win a entrance to this, access to WGN Radio's exclusive Tree Time Christmas in July blowout sale VIP private party on July 11th. From 6 to 8 p.m. at Tree Time in Lake Barrington, for you and a guest, it will include Lou Malnati's pizzas and raffle prizes like WGN swag, Anderson's candy shop, gift cards, decorating demonstrations, and a first look at up to 70% of the Tree Time blowout sale deals. Of course, over the last almost 10 years now, I've been a part of the annual Dean Richards Tree Time remote broadcast, which is always a highlight for Dean Richards fans and as well as those of us who participate in it, to go out to Tree Time, enjoy their beautiful warehouse of trees and Christmas decorations. There's no place better to get into the Christmas mood and share and add to your Christmas mood by all the different types of items that they have there, trees and decorations, you name it. Our house is filled with all different decorations that I've bought at Tree Time over the years. So this is a chance to get a head start and get in that Christmas mood in July. So we're going to give away to callers numbers 1 through 5. We got 5 winners for this. The Tree Time Christmas in July blowout sale VIP private party on July 11th to the first 5 callers at 312-981-7200. Good luck and have fun at Tree Time in July. Now we're going to have some fun with some pop culture news. Mm-hmm. That music can only mean one thing. It's time to go into the Pop Culture Club. Of course, that is Culture Club. Get the connection there? Pop Culture. Culture Club. You get it? Do you get it? Guest, Mick Kaler, do you get it?
I'm right on top of it, pal. Subtle as a sledgehammer.
Oh, that's the way you got to be in this business. If you don't if you don't hit people over the head with it, they don't get it.
I hear you.
I've got on the phone today one of my dearest and longest friends, Mick Kaler, who is a pop culture guru just like myself. Although, would you, considering, given our age, do you think you're as much of a guru today as you were, say, 30 years ago?
Probably not as much. You know, I try to stay on top of some of that, but yeah, you're right.
I mean, Mick and I met in college at Elmhurst College on the radio station there, WRSE, back in the mid-'80s, and we put out a monthly newsletter called the Hucklebuck Update for the people that used to listen to our shows on the college radio station. And that's all it was. If you think about it, the Hucklebuck Update, which is which our newsletter was called, because we were both fans of the Honeymooners, and there's an episode about the Hucklebuck, a song and a dance from the 50s. And that's how we sort of first bonded. But really, if you think about it, the Hucklebuck Update was a pop culture club.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was the start of it. You're right.
Because we wrote about what was going on in music and in pop culture.
Yeah, movies and all sorts of things, trends, all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's nice to see how much we've progressed over the last 40 years.
Haven't gone anywhere, pal.
you find a lane and you stay in it.
That's right. That's right. That's what I do.
Now, I should say that Mick has been a very successful a producer in the Chicago radio world. He's worked with Larry Lujack, and in fact, Robert Murphy, who he's still around, isn't he, or no? I mean, he retired.
Yeah, Murph's still in town. Yeah, he's actually a Facebook friend of mine. I posted up that I was going to be on today, and he clicked in, so maybe Murph's listening. I did 4 years with Murph at Q101, and then 10 years at US 99 with Big John and Ramblin' Ray and Trish, so yeah. You know, got a little bit of media traction under my feet.
And now Ramblin' Ray is back on the air in Chicago.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm thrilled for that, too. So good for him.
Yeah, and some of Mick's work is also seen on a regular basis on the WGN Morning News. He and his partner Al Flash write parody songs that often are accompanied by videos, which they play during the morning news. Anything new coming up?
Yeah, in July, Larry Potash, you know, morning co-anchor on the WGN Morning News, he's celebrating his 30th anniversary at Channel 9 doing the morning news, and we've got something in the works for Larry coming up in a couple weeks.
Wow, he's been there for 30 years?
Yeah, exactly. That's how time flies.
Wow. I said, I can't believe it's already July 1st tomorrow. But,
right.
So I think June went by fast, but wow. Larry Potash at WGN for 30 years. That's quite
yep.
a... I mean, that's getting into, you know, like Floyd Calber and Fahey Flynn kind of, tenures.
Stuff,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you remember, I mean, younger people don't even know who I'm talking about, but those of us who've been around in Chicago for a while, you remember names like Jill Daly and Fahey Flynn and Bill Curtis and Walter Jacobson and others, but man, that's 30 years. That's nothing to sneeze at. That's quite an accomplishment.
Yeah, it's impressive for sure.
Yeah. So you've got a song. What song? What parody song? What song are you? Can you give us a little hint?
We're doing it to Steely Dan's "Reeling in the Years."
Oh, good. That sounds good.
Yeah, that'll work out. Yeah, we got some. It's already done. We're still working on the video part of it. We've got some other things in the works too. Obviously, with the Bears season coming up, we got to do something for Caleb Williams and some other works got going in the works too. So we'll see what happens. Yeah,
very good.
Always busy doing something.
Well, as I said, Mick and I have known each other for several years, more than it really dawned on me. I said, "Wow, we've really known each other."
So
yeah,
that's been a long time. 42 years.
Yeah, think about that. And as I said, we bonded initially. We were both on the radio station at Elmhurst College, WRSE, still around. And initially, the way we sort of came to know each other and then become very close friends and work together for many years was we found out that we were fans of the Honeymooners show. I played this song called "The Hucklebuck," which is a 50s song that takes place is featured in a Honeymooners episode. And I played it during my show. It's kind of just a little funny joke. And Mick called up. He was listening, and he was like, "Is that the song from the Honeymooners?" And I was like, "Wow! If he knows that, this is somebody that I've got to know." And that's how we kind of bonded. That's how we called our little newsletter the Hucklebuck Update. But we also bonded as we got to know each other on something even more, dear to our hearts. And that was, we were both Elton John fans. And you have to remember,
And Springsteen fans.
And in the early 80s, it wasn't really that cool to be an Elton John fan.
No, you're exactly right.
He had amazing success in the 70s. And then he cooled off in the late 70s and early 80s. He was on his way back. And then, of course, in 1983, he had the major comeback with his Too Low for Zero album, which had I'm Still Standing. And I guess that's why they call it the blues. And then He had a pretty nice run there in the 80s and reestablished himself within the music world. But for a while there, he was kind of on the down low. And so when I heard that Mick was an Elton fan and was willing to admit it, I was like, wow, okay, this is somebody that I definitely want to get to know. And we both, in the years since we've talked about all our different Elton experiences, one thing that we also agreed on, it's something that I think is interesting to talk about today, especially because it has been Pride Month, and today is the Pride Parade. It's in full gear now. It kicked off at 11 o'clock this morning. Many people may not know, but in 1976, at what can be described as the height of his popularity, Elton John made a very bold admission, for that time especially, that not only affected his personal life, but really affected his career at the time. He was just coming off
cover of Rolling Stone magazine.
Yeah, coming off one of his and one of the biggest tours at the time, all around the country. Plus, he had a number one song that summer with "Don't Go Breaking My Heart," and then dovetailed that with this huge stadium and arena tour. Did four nights at the Chicago Stadium here in Chicago, and for what I understand, they wanted to even do a fifth night, but they didn't have room in the schedule. I mean, that was how great the demand was. But people, you have to go back. I know it's difficult for young people to understand this today because the whole gay experience is much more a part of our regular conversation. It's a part of our culture. And it's, there's stigma and there's certainly prejudice that goes on. But at the same time, you cannot deny that we've made amazing progress, especially in the last 10 or 15 years with same-sex marriage. But back in 1976, as I said at the beginning of the show, in 1969, the Stonewall event where people were literally arrested for being in a gay bar.
I mean,
that's the way things were. And in 1976, things were a little looser, but still there was a huge, huge prejudice. And most homosexual people were still in the closet, afraid to come out to their parents, afraid to come out to their families, afraid to come out to at all for a fear of losing their job, for being ostracized. It was a very difficult time, and many people were living double lives. And some people, to still extent, sadly, still do that. But in 76, it was not like it is today. And here was Elton John, arguably the biggest star in the world at the time, and he, on, as Mick just said, on the cover of Rolling Stone, the cover story, admitted that at that time he admitted he was bisexual.
Right, he was going both ways, and he was very liberal about his attitude and thought everybody else should too. And again, like you said, you think of the times of 1976, that was not the thinking of the general public.
And even though you could have looked at Elton and maybe made some observations given his flamboyance with the costumes,
the feather boas, the pink outfits.
And you could have said perhaps, but still at the same time, the irony was Elton was on the cover of teenage magazines, like aimed at young teenage girls, like win a dream date with Elton.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, at the same time, what they didn't know is that for 5 years at least, Elton was living with his manager, John Reed.
Yeah.
So in Elton's world, for him to have come out like that, to him, it wasn't really that big of a deal. And in his world, which was a little secluded, you know, he said, well, everybody knew I was gay. Everybody knew I was living with John Reed. Well, maybe in your circle they did. Maybe in the music world.
Your private world, sure.
Yeah, in your private world or in the music world they did. But certainly not in the major general mainstream public, and especially in the United States in 1976, people did not know that. And it was a shocking revelation, and it had major impact on his popularity and his career.
Yeah, I mean, you could, after that, as you remember, he put out that double album, the Blue Moves album, and he could hardly get any radio airplay. And again, a lot of people just kind of turned their way. Like, if they were big Elton John fans, they all of a sudden weren't. You obviously heard a lot of disparaging words and things and comments and judgments. And it took a long time for that recovery to happen. Like you said, 1983, before he kind of bounced back, even though Elton was still putting out music, it was just a tough road to go.
And you can go online. It's the October 7th issue, 1976 of Rolling Stone. You can look that up in their archives and look at it. Today, that interview seems mild.
Oh yeah, it wouldn't be any big. And today, it wouldn't be any big deal either.
No.
As far as somebody coming out like that.
Exactly. Not at all. But at that time, it was earth-shattering. And I wanted to, Mick and I will sort of share our remembrances of what it was like to be an Elton John fan at that time and have this revelation come out. It didn't only affect Elton's career, but it also affected many of his fans. And we'll share with that in a little bit more about that whole time in America's history in terms of its openness and its prejudice, sadly, toward anything that wasn't quote-unquote normal. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards. We'll be back after this. No switching. Jim Toronto with you here at WGN Radio, 720 AM. Filling in for Dean Richards on the Sunday morning show. Dean is away from the station today because he's doing some more double duty work for WGN Television. On the float at the Pride Parade, currently taking place in Chicago. If you're in the neighborhood, stop by and give a wave to Dean. I'm not sure how long the parade lasts, but I'm sure you can track him down somewhere. He'll be on that float, waving with his regal Queen Elizabeth kind of wave, I'm sure. On the phone, we've got Mick Kaler. We're talking pop culture news here. Before the news, we were talking about how back in 1976, because it's Pride Month and it is the Pride Parade today, talking about how the progress that we have made in the last 50 years and certainly in the last 10 or 15, but if you look at an overall kind of area, how gay rights and the entire movement has changed. I mean, don't forget, in 2015, same-sex marriage. 20 years ago, that idea would have been completely out of anybody's realm of existence, that this possibly could have happened. And yet here we are, and there's now families with children, and it's a whole different kind of acceptance and openness, I think we're a better culture for it. But back in 1976, it was still a very difficult time. If you were a homosexual, you did not, you feared. I mean, some people were very brave and came out, but other people were very afraid and lived in the shadows and lived almost double lives. And as I was talking to Mick, we kind of bonded on this fact because when we started talking about it, we were big fans of Elton John. In 1976, he admitted in a very bold cover story by a writer named Cliff Jar on the cover of Rolling Stone, admitted that he was bisexual. Now, Mick, I'm a few years younger than you.
Right.
When you read this, what did you think?
Well, I wasn't really surprised at what, you know, Elton came out with as far as his orientation and all. But I did think there would be some backlash because, like you said, these were different times. And I'm like, wow, you know, he must be pretty brave to come out and say these things. But, you know, you talk about the, you know, your fandom, and my fandom didn't change. It was like him being bisexual or gay or anything didn't change the fact that I loved his music. I saw him in concert. I appreciated what he brought to the world. So I didn't care. It didn't matter to me, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't even a teenager yet. And so when this came out, because this made major news, as I said, we joked. I mean, the funny thing is this was 1976. In 1982 or 1983, 6-7 years later, Boy George wore his orientation as a huge badge of honor.
Oh, sure, with the makeup and the outfits and all that stuff.
And yeah. it helped his career. He promoted
Right.
He promoted it. People didn't even know that. He was actually dating one of the guys in Culture Club.
Yeah.
But, I mean, what a difference. That was there even 5 or 6 years difference. It became something that had no real stigma to it, almost was a badge of honor and something that people were encouraged to do. And yet 5 or 6 years later, it was still something that was very taboo. I didn't even know. I was so young. I had to look up the term bisexual.
Just to figure out what it meant.
Yeah, right? I didn't know what it meant, you know. Yeah. And,
well, the other part of it too was there were people who said, "Well, I'm not going to listen to his music anymore," and I'm like, "Dude, you listen to the music. That's not going to change what you are. Okay, who cares?"
Yeah, and that was the thing. And you know, like you, I would assume as I wore, you know, I don't do anything, you know, half baked. So, I mean, everybody knew I was an Elton John fan. When I became an Elton John fan, I went all in. And I wore T-shirts every day and you name it. And I played the music and I had two drawers filled with Elton John T-shirts, wore them all the time. And so certainly when this happened, I don't know about you, but I was somewhat targeted and I was somewhat ostracized and made fun of. When this announcement came out, like, oh, ha, you know, he's, you know, your idol there, you know what he is and stuff like that. And I had the same reaction you did. I said, hey, I listened to his music.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll tell you the one thing that I am actually, you know, when I look back at my Elton fandom, and especially from this event, it made me at a young age think to myself, okay, what are my views?
Right, what are your values and what do you put importance on?
Yeah. Yeah, because because to your point where you said, oh, well, you know, I listen to his music, I had to say to myself, okay, wait a minute. There's people that are telling me that these people are bad and they're not normal and blah, blah, blah. And I said, but wait a minute. I admire his music. I admire him as a person. So wait a minute. How can I hate this group of people if he is a part of that group? I can't just summarily hate them, because when I get to know somebody, I'm judging them on who they are, not what they are. And so at a young age, I think because of Elton coming out and the age I was in, it helped form my attitudes that later on influenced me as I became an adult.
See, there's a positive right there. Exactly.
Yeah, you know, and I'm very proud to say about, well, I don't know how many years it's been now, but I've officiated a couple of weddings, and one of the weddings I've officiated is a same-sex marriage.
So there you go.
In fact, it's my wife's uncle and his now husband, and in fact, it's Joe's birthday today. So Ray and Joe, congratulations on your successful marriage. One of the proudest things of my life was to officiate your ceremony, and happy birthday to Joe. But my point is, at a young age, I had to start to think about who I was or what I was, where, you know, mm-hmm. at that age, most kids were just wondering, you know, when's your next Little League game?
Right.
But it was.
You had to go a little deeper in your psyche than that.
Yeah, and I'm happy for it. I mean, you know, my wife and I are regular donors to the Elton John AIDS Foundation. I have worked with, as I said, I knew somebody who died of AIDS in the 80s. Very sad. I know somebody that's been living with AIDS for the last 30 years, which is great to see the strides that we've made. But there's no question, even though, and Elton has said it throughout the years, he has said it in his autobiography, that it didn't hurt his career. If you were an Elton John fan, you knew what happened. Radio stations stopped playing. The radio stations in this town that were playing his music almost 24 hours a day in the 70s, they may not have stopped playing it, but they certainly didn't play it as much as they used to.
Right, they certainly cooled off. He wasn't a quote a pariah, but it was definitely far less enthusiasm. And even his tours after that were, you know, he still would play the Rosemont Horizon and all that, but it wasn't that heavy fever that there was certainly in the 70s. You know, like 74 and 76.
And I said, you know, the thing is, when that article came out, Elton has always said, oh, it, you know, as I said before, he felt like, well, everybody knew I was gay. Well, they didn't. Mainstream, they didn't, and maybe in his small world. And the other side of the coin is, too, is when that article came out, he claims, well, the article didn't have that much of an impact on my career. But once again, by the time the article appeared, Elton had finished his summer tour in the United States, which was hugely popular. He had a number one song, and now he was back in England, so he wasn't experiencing the furor and the hype that this was getting in the trenches, if you will, because he was back right. Home in England, so he wasn't really feeling it as much as what was going on here. But I can tell you, I listen a lot to the old Casey Kasem top 40 countdowns. They play them on satellite radio, and the funny thing is, when they do a certain week, you talked about the Blue Moves album that came out in 1976. Up to that, Elton's albums at that point were going into the charts at number one.
Right, that's where they played as soon as they were released. Yeah.
Captain Fantastic and Rock of the Westies were the first two albums in history to enter the charts at number one. And when Blue Moves came out, right at this time, it debuted at number three, and it never got to number one, and it stayed at number three, and then it went down. And his single from that album, Sorry Seems to Be the Hardest Word, I'm listening to Casey Kasem do the countdown, and at one point, this is before the article came out, and Casey says, well, Elton John's got another number one on his hands, no doubt about that. It's number six this week, but no doubt it's headed to the top of the charts. And then it stayed at number six and disappeared.
And then started dropping. Yeah. There you go.
So, but what a difference, as I said, in today's world, people now. I mean, I just was looking online this morning. There was an anchor in some town, an anchor man came out on the air during the news.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, what a difference we have come so far in our acceptance of this. As I said before, same-sex marriage would have been unthinkable even 20 years ago. It would have, if a politician would have said they were in favor of same-sex marriage, they never would have won an election.
Yep.
And so we have moved far. I know for some people in that community, the change still isn't happening fast enough, and we're seeing, you know, trans people wanting their rights and their acceptance, and I understand that, but you have to understand how much we, you know, change does not happen overnight.
And there's been plenty of progress.
And if you look at it in the big scheme of things, people today who are young today, you don't realize how fortunate you are, and you are experiencing the freedom that you have because of so many people in the past who did have to make sacrifices and did have to fight and did have to suffer. So on this Pride Day, everybody should be very proud, whoever you are and whatever you are, of who you are. And I think that's what the Pride Parade and the Pride Month is all about now. They've tried to expand that to say it's not just about homosexuals or different minority groups. It's about being yourself. So happy Pride Day to everybody. Now, what I did want to talk about is, can you believe, Mick, that 40 years ago, Born in the USA came out?
Yeah, early June of 1984.
1984.
Yeah, 40 years.
Once again, I said Mick and I are major Bruce Springsteen fans. And so when that album came out, we both went crazy. Mick, you have to admit this. You were a little skeptical.
When Dancing in the Dark, the single came out, I thought it was a little too popish. And I blogged about this a couple weeks ago, where a friend of ours was working at one of the radio stations in Chicago the weekend before the album came out. And he had the album in the studio, and he started needle dropping on some of the songs for me. And I was like, whoa, this this sounds big.
Yeah.
And of course it was.
Yeah.
You know, it was, 40 years. And then the Born in the USA tour. Remember, he first played the Horizon, and a year later, Bruce had to play Soldier Field, and he was playing football stadiums after that.
Yeah. I mean, that really, I mean, Bruce Springsteen had been around for a good 10 years, more than that. His debut came out in 73, but he became an international superstar with Born in the USA, which celebrates its 40th anniversary. And we're going to take a quick break here. And after we come back, I want to take a list and remind people of what a great year for music 1984 was, right after this.
A lot of good albums, yeah.
Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards this morning, but I hope you're listening anyway. We'll be back after this. No switching. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards this morning. Hope you're listening anyway. Don't forget, after I'm finished here at 1 o'clock, you can listen to Steve Dale's Other World. He's got lots planned, including he'll be talking with America's Got Talent Golden Buzzer winner, Liv Warfield, who's also in Teatro Cezani at the Cambia Theater here in Chicago, and also Alderman David Moore of the 17th Ward, who recently spent a week sleeping in a tent in his ward to bring attention to crime and the need for shot spotters. So that's going to be just some of the things that Steve Dale will be talking about on his show, Steve Dale's Other World. Right now, we're talking about pop culture in this world with Mick Kaler. Mick, I was saying that, can you believe it, that Born in the USA is 40 years old? But then when I was starting to feel nostalgic about that album, I started to look at some of the other albums. That was one hell of a summer for music.
Yeah, it was a monster year for album releases of artists that people knew, but this was like their big splashes. So why don't you run off a couple of those?
How's this one? Prince, Purple Rain.
Yep.
That wasn't too much of a legendary. I mean, this wasn't just like, well, these were some good albums. These, listen to the list I give you. These are career-making, star-making, legendary-making albums, as I said.
Yeah, these are landmarks.
Yeah.
You know? And before you go further, with Purple Rain, I looked it up, and at the end of next month, I think it's July 27th, is the 40th anniversary of when the Purple Rain movie came out.
Right. First the soundtrack, then the movie. I mean, what a summer that was. I mean, it was the whole year had some great things. But that summer, as I said, Bruce Springsteen had been around for a long time, had a huge cult following. But when Born in the USA came out, his fame just quadrupled. He became literally an international icon, and still is today, 40 years later. So Prince with Purple Rain, Tina Turner's Private Dancer album.
That was her comeback record, and, you know, to put this in perspective, Jim, okay, these came out in 84, okay, a year later, I was working at a record store. We were still selling these like it had just come out and everybody wanted it. I mean, it was just going crazy.
I know. Then,
you know, tapes, CDs, albums, didn't matter. That people were buying these things like there was no tomorrow.
Van Halen's 1984 album, which was driven by the song Jump. Huge!
Yep, exactly, yeah.
The Pretenders' Learning to Crawl, arguably their best album.
Definitely. In fact, I remember seeing them in concert that summer when I was working out at Poplar Creek, and that was one of the best shows I'd ever seen, and they played a lot of that record, and that was their best album overall.
Oh, yeah, Back on the Chain Gang, Show Me. Oh,
My City Was Gone.
My City Was Gone. Unforgettable Fire, U2, with Pride in the Name of Love on that one.
Right.
That elevated them from cult status into a major one. I mean, obviously, Joshua Tree a year later made them into global stars, but Unforgettable Fire certainly was a major, major album for them. We had Wham with Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go. Bryan Adams' Reckless album. Bryan Adams was huge that summer.
And the funny thing is, you know, he was big on MTV before then, but like you just said, and we're talking about this, these were like the booster rockets that established them that, hey, this is more than just a one- or two-album star. This is a mega deal right here.
And how about a female singer named Madonna with a Virgin?
Second album.
Like a Virgin. I mean.
Yeah. That was another one. Okay, there's a great example of someone who, when their first record came out, they're like, oh, well, who knows how far she's going to go. And like a virgin, really put the stamp on her that this is an established artist now.
I'm running out of time, but let me just name some of these titles. Frankie Goes to Hollywood, Huey Lewis's Sports, which had Heart of Rock and Roll, and I Want a New Drug, which were big hits in 84. R.E.M.'s Reckoning, which I still think is their best album. The Cars' Heartbeat City. In Excess had The Swing. Los Lobos' Will the World Survive. The Smiths, Husker Du, Billy Idol, The Go-Go's, The Thompson Twins, Depeche Mode. Wow, what a year in music.
Yeah, it sure was. It really was. It's a great look at 40 years ago.
Here's
the best part. Most of that music still holds up today, okay?
And you have to remember that it was those songs came out and it was the perfect storm because MTV was just at its power peak.
Yeah, and obviously being another booster rocket for these artists. Like when you mentioned Prince, When Doves Cry, that single with him in the bathtub, of course, everybody just went crazy. And then, like I said, wait till you see the movie.
Right.
And then it's like, not only is Prince a music star, he's a movie star, too.
Yeah, unbelievable. Well, thank you so much, Mick, for your recollections and your information and your insights.
My pleasure, pal. It's always fun with you.
Always fun to do a pop culture club with Mick Kaler. Thanks so much, Mick. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, pal, take care.
Jim Tirano filling in for Dean Richards here at WGN Radio, 720 AM. And we'll go to the news with Dave Schwann. Jim Tirano with you here on one of those hot, fun in the summertime days here in Chicago. Even though not too hot today, but don't worry. I'm sure more hot weather is on its way. We can get a little break here, I'm sure. But by the time August and September come, it's going to be 90s and 100 once again. And we know how it felt a couple of weeks ago, which is one reason why I wanted to talk to this guy. An Emmy Award winning, TV Emmy Award winning producer at the WGN television weather department, Bill Snyder. How you doing, Bill?
I'm good, Jim. How are you? It's good to talk to you, my friend.
Very good. I tell you, you know Bill Snyder's work. I came to know of Bill. Have we ever met? I hate to sound, but did we ever meet?
Oh, yeah, we did. We've met, and you know what? You know where we met?
Where?
Recently, I think it was at the Elton John concert a couple years ago.
That's right. Exactly. Yes,
yeah.
Yes. But we never really met. But we never really met professionally.
No, I don't think we have.
That's what I was thinking, because I came to know of Bill, and he was very nice about my radio work. But, of course, when I was on with Gary Meyer for 5 years here at WGN in the afternoon, Tom Skilling was a major part of that show. We used to kick the show off talking to Tom, and it set the tone for the show. Tom was so fun, and we rarely even talked about the weather.
I know. It was great. You guys were awesome. I mean, it was such a treat to listen to every day.
Yeah,
that was quite the trio for sure.
Yeah, we had so much fun, and Tom was such a great part of that. And I want to talk a little bit about Tom, but I wanted to have you on because the weather here is so crazy. Oh, tell us and do a little bragging. How did you win that Emmy Award? Tell me about that Emmy Award.
Well, I won that Emmy Award. There was a piece that we worked on, both Tom and I, and then my colleague Mike Lowe, the very talented reporter Mike Lowe, who does such an incredible job of storytelling. And he decided, he came to us and wanted to do a piece on kind of like the work behind the scenes, so to speak, and just, you know, how does the forecast come together? How does a typical work day in the life of Tom Skilling work? And so, you know, it was great. I mean, they shot him from his home. They shot him as he finished his work, came to the station. They shot him, you know, as he walked in, and then they came in and captured some of my work on what goes on and on my end as the, you know, the forecast and the shows get put together every day. So it was quite a collaboration there, and it all came together, and the piece was on tracking us, the master at work tracking a storm. We were at that time following a potential snow system that wound up fizzling out for us. It became a bigger deal in other areas in the eastern Midwest, but for us here, it was it didn't turn out to be anything too out of the ordinary by winter standards. And so, it was a really, really cool piece. And Mike Lowe, of course, was a big part of that, because there's very few in this business that tell a story like Mike does. And so between the collaboration between all of us, we came out a winner. It was very exciting. It was, you know, I worked with Tom for 27 years, and my goodness, you know, everything, a lot of the stuff that I know today is attributed to working with a legend. And so it was nice to actually win an Emmy with Tom. It was almost like a storybook ending, Jim, because, hey, I mean, he had announced his retirement, you know, several weeks prior to that, to the Emmy Awards. And so kind of like the last bit of hoopla,
right,
as Tom went out, we got to win an Emmy together. So it was very special. It was very sentimental to me, and it was so much fun. You know, you go into these things. I've been nominated before on various pieces, but never won. But it's always an honor just to be nominated. But to actually win it was very special. So that was a fun night.
And my key question is, how heavy is that thing?
You know what? It's heavier than you think, but it's not super heavy. It's probably, I never actually weighed it, but I'd say it's between 10 and 15 pounds.
Whoa, okay, that's a good workout.
Yeah. So yeah, oh yeah, you could do a few arm curls with,
yeah,
it, for
definitely.
Sure. But right now it's sitting in my mantle case here in the living room,
nice,
at home. So yeah,
well you deserve
to keep that baby safe and secure, yeah, right? Yeah, yeah. No, it was really cool.
In fact, Tom was always very magnanimous, and many of his. His broadcast, especially when you would cut in when there was a very severe storm,
yes,
you know, with snow or rain or tornadoes, and Tom would,
right,
they would be giving Tom, you know, they'd give him the airwaves for hours sometime, and he would always say,
right,
and Bill Snyder in the back there,
yeah,
he's telling me,
right,
that snow is right now in Plainfield, yeah.
Right, right,
and
or that there's a report of a tornado touchdown, or, you know,
yeah,
Morris had a 74 mile an hour wind gust. You know,
right.
I mean, it's kind of interesting when that stuff develops, Jim, because you know you just know it's going to be chaotic, and it is, and this is you know, it's not glamorous, but this is live TV. At, you know, for what it's worth, when you get in the middle of these breaking weather situations, and certainly with severe weather, that's you know, bar none at the top of the list there, because we're constantly trying to feed information out to our viewers, and you're absorbing information that's coming in through the airwaves, and so it just becomes quite a process throughout the evening, and you kind of get done with these things, and your head is spinning, because you never really know,
right,
how long you're going to be on the air.
Yeah, I mean, I know there's sometimes
years ago,
yeah, I remember, like, recently, it was about a year or so ago, Tom,
yeah,
was on for like 4 hours. Something happened. I can't,
yeah,
remember. And they cut,
yeah,
in, and you guys,
right,
were on for like 4 hours.
Yeah. That's the new era of severe weather TV media, Jim. I mean, it's crazy. When I started out in this business, you know, we would break in if there was a tornado warning, and you'd get the specifics, and you get the information out to the public. And then if there wasn't actual confirmation of a touchdown, you would say, okay, we'll come back. This is breaking weather. We'll be back with more details as it deems necessary. Well, now, you know, we're in an era now where if there is a tornado warning, and even if there isn't confirmation of it, you know, we have such wonderful tools at our disposal with Doppler radar and so forth that have come so far in advance in the last, you know, 2-3 decades, that if there's radar indication of a potential tornado, we stay on the air because,
yeah,
it could be potentially touching down. And, you know, you like to keep the viewers abreast of the situation. And so it's definitely different. And if there's a night where, you know, you're talking about not just one pop-up storm that could potentially produce a tornado, but where you have a series of them, you know, like we had, remember that derecho we had a couple of years ago?
Oh, definitely.
August?
Yeah, we lost power at our house for a week.
Yeah,
after
I believe that.
Yeah.
That was something. I,
yeah,
mean, that started out in Iowa and produced, I think, wind speeds of over 100 miles an hour, and it raced eastward towards us, and we knew, you know, that was a situation where we knew it wasn't going to just be one area that was going to be hit. This was going to be, you know, widespread wind damage across,
yeah,
the Chicago,
you know,
area.
You know what?
Those are the events.
You know what's
really
good? I'm glad you mentioned that, because it dovetails into exactly what I wanted to ask you. So, okay, now just bear with me and tell,
yeah,
me if I'm crazy or not. Because I was floating this theory, and so when I found out I was filling in for Dean, I said, I want to have Bill Snyder on to see if I'm just crazy or is this possible, okay? You're a weather guy. You know this. All right. So now, last 2 weeks, it's been 95, 100 degrees, unbearable heat, unbearable humidity, just icky. That's not my weather. Today is my weather. This is my weather right now.
Right.
This
is my weather. Taste of fall today, for sure, Jim.
Yeah, I love it.
Amazing.
Yeah, this is my weather. But, you know, so here we are. So I was watching the news. I faithfully watch the WGN news, and Demetrius is telling me that we have a heat dome.
Right.
Okay. So I think in your business, you've been in the business how many years now?
Over 25 years.
Okay.
Yeah. 27 plus.
I'm sure you have to have marveled at the progress that technology has done, where before it literally was about weather like forecasting, or no, it was weather predicting, but now it's forecasting. You guys are nailing it. There used to be times when you'd watch the news and they would say a big snowstorm's coming, and all of a sudden, oh, a high pressure system came and we missed it.
Right.
And everyone would go,
right,
you know, I'm not believing the weathermen. But now you guys are, for instance, that eclipse, I mean, it was amazing.
Yeah.
They were predicting the to the second that the eclipse was hitting at certain cities. That's unbelievable.
Right.
So
it is unbelievable. Yeah.
So
you're absolutely right, Jim.
Yeah. So here's my question. So now we know we have. You just said we knew that derecho was coming. You said right.
Right. Oh,
we,
yeah.
We,
I mean,
saw it.
There are certain situations where we don't know until hours beforehand.
Okay.
You know?
So, but here's my thing.
But yes.
So hold on here. So now you have this amazing technology that lets you see these things developing, you know, hundreds of miles away. You can chart the progress. You can see it coming.
Yeah.
So now we were told there's this heat dome that is just standing over Illinois, the Chicago area, and it's not moving. Right.
Right.
So now here's my question for weather in general, for your business, for the weather forecasting business, and for us as the experiencers of this weather.
Right.
Do you think that now the next step in your business is not just predicting or forecasting? Because you have such deep knowledge down to the second when things are going to happen, you regularly tell me, oh, there's going to be a snow is going to be falling in Elgin at 7:24, you know?
Right.
Do you foresee, is it possible that now that you have this knowledge, as opposed to just saying it's going to rain, it's going to snow, do you think the next step could be, or is this science fiction? Can you take that knowledge and do something so it doesn't snow? Like, you know what I mean? Like, for instance, you said there's a heat dome over Chicago, right?
Right. And the east, of course.
Wherever.
Yeah.
Wherever. I'm just saying, we're in the middle of this heat dome. If you knew this heat dome was going to happen, can you invent some giant pin?
To stop
the heat dome? Can you pop the heat dome? Can you stop the weather from coming? You know it's coming.
No.
You're telling us it's coming. But can you stop it, or is that just crazy? Is that comic book stuff?
I think that's comic book stuff. Yeah, I really do. No, I don't think that this is that we're at that stage. I mean, I'll tell you what, they keep funneling more and more. You know, supercomputers become more and more sufficient over the years. The resolution is incredible. But as far as actually changing the weather physically, I think that's a little far fetched.
Okay, because
who knows what's going to happen down the road, Jim? I mean, you never say never about anything.
Because I'm sitting here, I'm sitting here every night, and you know, Demetrius Ivory, in addition to playing all his cool funky music underneath the pictures now, which is a new addition. You know, he's telling me there's a heat dome, and it's after 3 or 4 or 5 days. I'm like, would somebody pop this dome? Because I just want to get rid of it. And I'm just wondering, like for instance, and to be in all seriousness, that may sound like a crazy idea, but if you were to try to change some weather thing, would you then impact weather everywhere else around the world?
Well, it's certainly possible because, Jim, what goes on in one part of the country or even in the world certainly has an impact in other parts. So, for example, this heat dome that you're talking about, you know, it was in place. Dude, there was a Bermuda high that was in place, and what happened is it retrograded further west than it typically does. This high created a blocking pattern, and what happened there is then it forced storms northward. So, interestingly, you heard about it also made news while it was kind of hot, where it was hot here, and then, of course, in the Ohio Valley and eastern U.S. You heard about the tragic flooding in Iowa and Minnesota, right?
Yeah.
Well, that forced the storm track in that area because they were just to the west of the periphery of this heat dome. So they kept getting regular repetitive thunderstorms. And so, you know, they just got ungodly amounts of rain. I mean, I think in some parts of Iowa, they had 15 inches of rain.
Right, yeah.
That was less than a week.
That was crazy.
And so, you know, when one part of the country is having one type of weather, another part's having something else. And so this Bermuda high, which created this dome of heat, it also created a deep trough in the along the west coast in the Rockies. So guess what? That brings cold air into those areas. So you know what? If you didn't like the weather in Chicago, you could have gone out to Montana, Jim, and in the higher elevations of Montana, they were getting unusual late season snow. So while it was you know 95, 96 degrees here, They were shoveling snow in the higher elevations of Montana. So how about that?
I know. It's so crazy. And I mean, I know. Yeah. I mean, what I'm suggesting here sounds like, you know, like I said, an episode from the old Adventures of Superman with George Reeves, where right, Superman would come and punch the heat dome and get rid of it. I understand that. But I guess from your standpoint in the business, seeing how the technology has moved so much, I mean, it's got to be somewhat frustrating now to sort of know what's coming and not be all you can do
not
is tell
do
me.
About it.
Yeah,
right.
All you can do is tell me and to get into my basement or take cover.
Right.
But you really can't use that to alter anything. It must be a little frustrating now.
Yeah. No, it is. And I mean, hey, Jim, you know, perfect example. Not here, but thousands of miles away from us. Wouldn't it be nice to be able to have something to blow up this hurricane that's developed into a Category 4 that's going to impact areas down there? I mean, that's going to make a lot of news here in the days ahead. So, there's a perfect example. You know, when you see a monster storm like that developing, and you know what? There's nothing you can do about it. And just watch it and see what it's going to do.
We've got all. It's so great that we've got all this information. And yet, it using it can only go up to a certain point. I think it's the first time in history that we've gotten so much, technology that gets the weather. As I said, I was watching that eclipse coverage, and they were nailing that down to the second.
Yeah,
and I said,
and you know what's funny about that is there were some outlets, some media outlets, maybe several weeks ahead of time that were for clicks and shares on social media that were posting. Forecasts of gloom and doom and, if you're in this path, it's going to be cloudy. And that is a perfect example that 3-4 weeks ahead of time, Jim, there is literally no accuracy with pinpointing a forecast such as that. So you do have people that are out there that just they like to try to get their name out there and they they look for, for attention. But you have to be careful in who you're following and decipher the information properly because that's just that simply wasn't true.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Bill, for indulging my crazy ideas.
No, hey Jim, you know what? I at this point in time, I mean, you know what? We're in an era where technology has just gotten so good that I don't rule anything out down the road it's interesting. I enjoy my job just because I sit back and I see just how, even in the last quarter century, how things have evolved. And I'm excited to see in the years ahead what comes next. I mean, it's going to be interesting to follow, but we certainly marvel at just being able to keep keep the general population informed when crazy weather.
Well, no, you do a great job, and certainly, as you said, you learned at the feet of the master. We miss Tom so much.
Oh yeah,
but it's great have people like you behind the scenes, continuing to live by the high standards and work by the high standards that he set. Once again, always I'm avid Channel 9 weather watcher. So I'm watching your work every day. Keep up the good work. Thank you so much for your kind words about me, and hopefully we'll actually get a chance to say hi and spend a little time together, because I do remember meeting you, but we it's always just been over the airwaves or emails and stuff. But keep up the good work, and get us some good weather for the 4th of July.
I'll work on that, Jim. Yeah, you know, it looks like we kind of have some unsettled weather developing Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Now, in typical summertime fashion, it's not a, cancel your outdoor plans type of situation, but we do run the risk of seeing, isolated showers and thunderstorms pop up at any given time. So it'll be one of those, one of those situations where you just want to keep up with the current forecast. And as it gets closer, we'll certainly be able to time that better for everyone.
Well, thank you so much. Bill Snyder from WGN-TV.
Jim, it's a pleasure, my friend.
Weather producer and always an FOT, friend of Tom.
You betcha. Great to talk to you, my friend.
Thank you. Take care, Bill. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards here at WGN Radio 720.